a otros laboratorios. Josh subraya que ese experimento dejó una cuantiosa suma de dinero para los laboratorios y la industria farmacéutica. La profesora Susan Reverby, del Colegio Wellesley, señala que en los años 40, el United States Public Health Service también inyectó gonorrea a prisioneros en la penitenciaría federal Terre Haute del estado de Indiana. El doctor Mark Ziegler, director del Centro Médico McLean para la Ética Médica en la Universidad de Chicago, señala que es irónico que mientras que Estados Unidos enjuiciaba a doctores alemanes nazis por crímenes contra la humanidad, simultáneamente apoyaba los experimentos con los guatemaltecos y otros.
It's also been easier to, for legal purposes and otherwise, to engage populations abroad in sterilization studies or other sorts.
John Josh dice que por razones legales, programas de esterilización y otros experimentos se han hecho en otros países. Añade que esas actividades provocarían demandas y otro tipo de litigios en las cortes para los responsables. A pesar de la sorpresa expresada en días pasados por las autoridades estadounidenses ante los experimentos con sífilis con guatemaltecos, el sitio web Natural News reporta que desde 1845 esos experimentos han sido permitidos dentro de la Unión Americana. Entre 1963 y 1966, investigadoras de la Escuela Estatal Willowbrook en Staten Island, en Nueva York, infectaron a niños retardados mentales con hepatitis para examinar la globulina en su contra. En 1963, ancianos, pacientes del Hospital Judío para las Enfermedades Crónicas en Brooklyn, Nueva York, inyectaron pacientes con células cancerosas para ver si éstas causaban tumores. La larga lista de experimentos con humanos incluye soldados que participaron en la Guerra del Golfo, que fueron obligados a ser inyectados con vacunas y otras drogas experimentales.
Mucho de esto también refleja just that mentality that there are too many people taking up too much space.
Josh anota que esos experimentos reflejan la mentalidad de esta época de expansión capitalista en la que algunos piensan que hay mucha gente en el mundo que ocupa espacio y consume los escasos recursos. La gente poderosa que opera detrás de la última etapa fascista del capitalismo global, dice Josh, miran a la mayoría de la gente del mundo como desechables.
As monopoly capital reaches its final stage, tremendous concentration of wealth, of a leap forward in the...
Josh subraya que la habilidad del monopolio capitalista para concentrar riqueza en forma tecnológica y científica frena la distribución de esa riqueza, obliga a devaluaciones de la moneda y hace más atractiva la meta de un genocidio a nivel global. Un ejemplo de esa mentalidad ocurrió en 1906, cuando el doctor Richard Strong, profesor de la Universidad de Harvard, infectó con cólera a varios prisioneros en las Filipinas. 13 de ellos murieron. Los sobrevivientes fueron compensados con puros y cigarrillos. Durante los tribunales de Nuremberg, los doctores alemanes nazis usaron como defensa esos experimentos en Los Ángeles. Yo soy Fernando Velázquez.
Visita a Neuquén Capital esta semana el politólogo Atilio Borón, el investigador superior del CONICET, titular de la teoría política de la Universidad de Buenos Aires y director del programa latinoamericano de educación a distancia, se encuentra en Neuquén Capital dando un curso sobre la democracia en América Latina. Hablamos con él sobre la situación de la América Latina de hoy. Dijo que la democracia en América Latina está acosada. Esto es parte de lo que hablábamos con Atilio Borón.
Es un contexto marcado por grandes incertidumbres sobre la continuidad de los procesos de democratización, ¿verdad? Hay ahora el peligro de una reversión de todo eso a partir de una contraofensiva muy fuerte que Estados Unidos ha lanzado desde el año 2008, con la reactivación de la Cuarta Flota, la tentativa de golpe de Estado en Bolivia que falló, el golpe de Estado exitoso que lograron finalmente en Honduras, la nueva tentativa ahora en Ecuador, ¿no es cierto? Donde al principio el propio Departamento de Estado, por boca de Arturo Valenzuela, que es el subsecretario de Estado adjunto para Asuntos Interamericanos, dijo que se trataba no de un golpe, sino un acto de indisciplina policial, así dicho entre comillas, y bueno, las últimas informaciones que entregó el jefe de la Policía Nacional de Ecuador el día de ayer demuestran que esa indisciplina policial costó 10 muertos y 274 heridos. Uh-huh. O sea, si uno mira el panorama regional latinoamericano, vemos cómo hay un avance muy fuerte de gobiernos de derecha, ¿verdad? Desde México hasta Chile, pasando por Colombia, por Perú con Alan García, los procesos que se han dado en Centroamérica, ¿no es cierto? En el caso de Costa Rica, muy evidente, ¿verdad? Uh-huh. Ahora autorizó la llegada de hasta 6.000 marines y 46 naves de guerra, lo cual habla de un retroceso. Estamos, ¿verdad? Hoy en día la democracia en América Latina está acosada uh-huh. y las chances de sobrevivencia de una democracia vital, genuina, uh-huh. son cada vez menores, ¿no? Va a haber que luchar mucho para que este poco avance que hemos logrado no se eche a perder.
Desde Neuquén Capital, Radio Universidad, les informó Marcelo Pascucio para Farco Satelital.
Hola, ¿qué tal? Soy Erika Ramírez, reportera de la revista Contralínea en la Ciudad de México.
Erika, háblanos del reportaje que están ustedes destacando esta semana en la revista Contralínea.
Pues mira, se trata de los gastos que tiene el Instituto Federal Electoral. Esta institución es la encargada de vigilar que se garantice la democracia en el país. El consejero presidente y los consejeros que conforman el primer cuadro de esta institución rebasan en salario el salario del presidente de la República en un 16%. Esto en el marco de que en 2009 el presidente Felipe Calderón impuso un tope salarial a todos los funcionarios públicos que se encuentran en todos los niveles de gobierno del país. Los salarios rebasan en 40.000 pesos. Son 6 consejeros junto con el consejero presidente y cada uno gana más de 244.000 pesos, en tanto que el presidente de la República gana 203.000 pesos mensuales. Esto comprende su sueldo más prestaciones en efectivo y en especie. La Auditoría Superior de la Federación en 2009 también resaltó que algunos poderes de la Unión tienen prácticas de opacidad y un exceso de discrecionalidad en el manejo de su presupuesto. Y bueno, es claro este ejemplo en el que podemos ver cómo además de estos salarios rebasados, cada uno de los consejeros cuentan con un amplio equipo de asesores que significan un gasto mensual de 4.6 millones de pesos. Esto en el marco de las críticas de algunos investigadores que señalan al IFE como una administración obesa y despilfarradora que está amparada por la autonomía de la institución, ¿no?
Erika, ¿qué trabajo hace el IFE?
El IFE vigila las elecciones en el país. Por ejemplo, en el 2006 decidió si se abrían o no las urnas para contar los votos en la confronta que había entre Felipe Calderón y Andrés Manuel López Obrador. El IFE fue quien, bueno, ya como árbitro de estas elecciones decidió que no sería así, que se abriría un juicio que sigue pendiente y que, bueno, todos los mexicanos nos quedamos con la duda, ¿no?, de si había habido un fraude electoral. Además de que, bueno, está al pendiente de los comicios al interior de la República y apoya a algunos organismos estatales. Y por eso la Auditoría Superior de la Federación criticó que en algunos cargos, como es en el Ejecutivo, en el Legislativo y en el Poder Judicial, los organismos operan de manera opaca, discrecional. Con esto podemos decir que los consejeros están desoyendo un decreto presidencial. Y pues bueno, los invito a leer el reportaje y los de mis compañeros que se pueden encontrar en www.contralinea.com.mx.
Hemos llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica, un programa producido gracias a la colaboración de radios indígenas, comunitarias y libres de América y Europa. Nuestro agradecimiento a todas las personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, yo soy Norma Martínez. Gracias por su atención.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPod o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
Bien, eso es estación Radio Libre, Radio Free Radio Santa Cruz. You're listening to 101.1 FM 101.1. and that's, unfortunately, it's in English for all you Spanish speakers, so my apologies, here we go with Bathrob Spears Broadsides, the October 14th, 2010 edition.
Efficiency in progress is ours once more. Now that we have the neutron bomb, it's nice and quick and clean and get things done. Away with stress and enemy, but no less valued a property. The sense in war, the perfect sense.
That was Kill the Poor. Compliments, I believe, the Dead Kennedys and Jello Biafra. You are, as mentioned before, tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, www.freakradio.org, and 101.1 FM. In the studio with me is the inimitable, possibly, and not really imitable, no, he's pretty inimitable, Steve Plaich, spelled P as in prison, L as in larynx, E as in eek, I as in eye, C as in candor, and H as in Hellion. Steve Plaich.
Mucho gusto, Don Roberto.
Oh, no, español. Now we're going to get back into the Spanish-speaking approach. Yeah. Actually, on occasion, I have tried to do a bilingual show, very occasionally, actually. In fact, I think once I tried that. And it could happen again, possibly with you as translator, Steve.
Yeah, my Spanish is proficient, certainly not fluent.
Proficiente?
Sí, pues, más o menos.
Anyway, I know, Steve, that you just came out of the den of iniquity, the poverty pimp villa, the Potemkin poverty pimpsky land, the what we call it, homeless service center, the HSC is actually the it's a collection of buildings out of 115 Coral Street at the corner of Highway 1 and Highway 9, which involves originally involved just the River Street mini shelter, then that grew to include the mini shelter and a free meal, and that included suddenly the homeless community resource center, which became the homeless service center. Then they added the Homeless Persons Health Project, and, of course, and along came the Rebelle Family Shelter at a cost of, I don't know, a million or two, and Now we have the Paul Lee Loft added on. So here's this clump of homeless services with essentially no more shelter than there was 15 years ago for homeless people who are looking for emergency shelter. But apparently enough hoop-de-doo for an open house today between noon and 3.
A gala celebration, 25 years of success and happy trails.
25 years? How the hell did
they actually
get that?
I think they said it was 1987, so it was 23, I think.
There has not been a homeless service center there since 1987.
Well, somebody mentioned 1987 on the day yesterday.
Somebody mentioned it, but I'm not sure what they meant, what they were referring to. There was a River Street mini shelter there, which had 14 beds. And there were police officers arresting homeless people for sleeping outside.
And how long ago was that?
It was opened in 1987, actually. Thanks to the activism of people who were willing to go to jail and even commit their put their lives on the line with hunger strikes, such as Jane Immler and Linda LeMaster and Shannon Cosamo and others whose names that I don't really know because I wasn't even active in that field particularly at that time. But, yeah. And, of course, they, I'm sure, were not celebrated. Probably the name Jane Immler wasn't even heard.
Linda LeMaster's name was celebrated. I took the tour with her.
Well,
she was prominent today.
She was prominent, but probably not mentioned by any of the poverty pimps who were running the show, right?
Not by name.
So what happened? How long were you there at this affair?
Well, it began at noon and ended at 3, and I got there about 12:15 and stayed until the end. Enjoyable. I got to meet a lot of people who I had not met before, saying Roland Rabelais, who I had not met. Catherine Byers was there, Don Lane. I met Paul Lee. So, and I had an extended chat, in fact, with Monica Martinez about the Robert North suggestion of a receipt program for homeless when all the shelter beds are filled every night.
Not to say Robert North's Tony Madrigal suggestion.
Well, Robert North primarily.
I am, of course, the greatest. We know that. So what was my... Of course, for the people who don't understand what we're talking about...
Yeah, maybe a little background would be good.
Should I give it or would you?
Please, no, go ahead.
The Homeless Service Center has a program called the Paul Lee Loft, which... there used to be a thing called the Interface Satellite Shelter Program, which you could come line up every night and get a bed, maybe, if you were lucky. During the summer, it was increasingly unlikely, and for the last, actually, decade... You weren't likely to get a bed any time between April 15th and November 15th because during that time there was only like 20 or 30, sometimes maybe 40, beds in the Interface Satellite Shelter Program, which was a convoy system to various church floors. There were not beds. They were mats on the floor. And they were taken up with disabled people, elderly people, regulars who were there. So instead, the Homeless Service Center during that period of time would give you a letter if you came in with a ticket saying there was no shelter, and you would take the ticket and the letter to the judge or the commissioner, often Commissioner Basket, and she would say, eventually she began saying, okay, ticket dismissed. So that was a procedure they used. However, the law was changed around the time Peace Camp 2010 started, actually about a month or two after, but the policy at the Homeless Service Center was changed to state that they would not give you a letter unless you were on their waiting list, even though waiting lists have a length of time for 4 to 6 weeks for men and 2 to 3 weeks for women. So it didn't really matter if you were on a waiting list or not. Almost invariably, there would be no beds available for you on that night. So if you got a ticket that night, the question might arise for a person looking in, well, if there's no shelter... And they're going to call you personnel person from the Homeless Service Center into court to testify that there is no shelter, which means that the ticket will be dismissed. Why don't you just issue a letter? Well, they stopped issuing those letters. Apparently, well, perhaps you can throw some light on it. Maybe you got Steve Clark to come clean that it was an attempt to smash Peace Camp 2010. And perhaps this caller has the answer. Hey there, caller. You're on Free Radio with Uncle Robert and Uncle Steve.
Robert, we'd really like to hear Steve talk.
Oh, come on. He's not important.
If you could keep your questions short and his answers long, those of us who are trying to evaluate candidates for the city council election would appreciate it. Thank you. Bye.
Oh, thank you, Dennis. Well, we can ignore him. He'll be coming on. Actually, he's on at 8 o'clock for the absurd amount of time to 11, I think it is.
Well, I appreciate Dennis's interest.
And well, he will no doubt give you a full airing during his period of time. And Dennis, you probably would know had you listened to my show on previous occasions that Steve has been a frequent co-host. and frequent guest on the show. We don't usually let him talk too much because that would be wrong.
So we had enough background now that I can kind of tell you what the upshot. Well, have you finished to the point where I can?
Well, the issue is, why is Monica not? As she's the executive director of the Homeless Service Center, Monica Martinez.
She is.
And apparently they changed their policy. They're not giving out letters anymore unless you're on the waiting list, stating that, you know, there was a no space on this night, and so the courts can dismiss the case. She also isn't giving out letters that say, during this entire period of time in the summer, there generally aren't any spaces.
So bring us up to the amendment of the ordinance that they just had and what the effect of that is going to be, then fold in your suggestion for receipts. And that'll bring us up to date.
Okay, but it has to be understood before I do that all of these changes have nothing to do with the ordinance. They have everything to do with the public awareness that there's no shelter at the shelter during the summer, and therefore any tickets issued by the police are illegitimate. And that is something the city attorney does not want to acknowledge, and the city council does not want to accept. So instead, they passed an ordinance which said, if you're on a waiting list in the Homeless Service Center, Monica Martinez's waiting list.
More properly, an amendment to an ordinance. But go ahead. That's right.
Well, it was. That's correct. It was done as an ordinance, but the ordinance amended an existing ordinance, which is the sleeping ban, which is the ordinance we want to see eliminated or severely reformed, which states now that if you're on this waiting list, then your ticket will be dismissed. You don't have to go all the way to court. You can just go to the city attorney, and she or he will dismiss your citation. Not what we asked for, which is call the damn shelter, see if there's a bed. If there isn't a bed, don't issue a ticket because you're wasting police time. You're
wasting
everybody's time.
Which would be the ideal solution, of course.
Well, it wouldn't be ideal. But
then at
the
public hearing on this amendment, you suggested.
Yes, thank you for bringing me that way, Steve. I suggested that if they're going to do this at all, what they should do is make sure that the homeless person who is issued a place on the waiting list gets evidence of this through a receipt or some kind of a written indication that they are on the list, so they can then show that to the police officer or whoever to indicate that, see, I'm on the waiting list, please, please, please leave me alone. Of course, the cop won't leave them alone. They'll issue them a ticket anyway. But then when they go to the city attorney might leave them alone. Probably not. The city attorney will call up the Homeless Service Center to determine if the homeless people with their underground presses have been forging these, proof of being on the waiting list. Anyway, I've written her emails. I've talked to her on the phone, Monica Martinez. I have not been able to get her to state that this will be the procedure, that they'll issue these receipts that, yes, you are on the waiting list. Yes, we will issue a letter even if you weren't on the waiting list, if the shelter was full, because that's the truth at that night. And we will not issue a statement so far. She has so far refused to say, we'll issue a statement that says, during this whole 7 or 8 month period during the summer, there is no space. Thank you very much. But you talked to Monica.
I found
out something. And for the benefit of Uncle Dennis, let's give you at least 10 seconds to give us the answer.
Well, I prefaced my remarks to Monica by saying that there was a suggestion that a receipt be issued to people who were on the waiting list, and that receipt be bona fides of the fact that the shelters were filled that particular night, and that then there would be no enforcement of any sleeping ban on that particular night. Now, what she told me was that whenever she receives direction from John Barisoni at the city attorney's office, then she would do whatever he directed her to do. Now, I suspect that politically the way it would work, and I intend to go over and talk to John Barisoni myself next week, politically, legislatively, the way it would work is that he would probably make a recommendation to the city council, in which I would have to get 4 votes on the city council so that they would approve that, and then they could direct Monica to issue receipts, and then they could also direct the police department not to issue tickets on any night when there was full shelter.
It ain't never going to happen there, Steve.
Well, you're an advocate, Robert, and I'm a politician. And that's the difference between yourself and myself. And what I do, politics is the art of the possible. I think that talking to John Barisoni has the virtue of having never been tried. And so when I go over and talk to him... But not necessarily on this issue, as I intend to.
True.
So when I go over and talk to him, I will see what his reaction to it is and where we can proceed from there. And we'll see if we can make any progress toward what I think is an excellent solution, and that was what you have suggested. But I'm trying to do it by political means, you try to do it by advocacy means, and we're both trying to get to the same place, but we're just using different avenues.
Actually, no, we're not. you have adopted the Monica Martinez mythology, which that somehow John Barisoni's involvement is necessary in this whole equation. It is not. All Monica Martinez has to do is say, we will issue receipts indicating you're on the waiting list. If John Barisoni chooses to accept them or not accept them, if the police department chooses to accept them or not accept them, the city council chooses to change the law or not, that's up to them. But Monica Martinez has the power in her, pretty little hands, and she's a nice looking person, to do that tomorrow, to have done that yesterday, in fact, to have done that a month and a half ago when we first asked her and her board of directors to, without any consultation.
When I go talk to John Barisoni next week and he affirms that to me, that no, Monica can do whatever she wants, then I can go back to Monica and say, John Barisoni says you do whatever you want, I want you to do this.
Yes, but it would seem to me that you might turn to Monica and say, so Monica, are you powerless to issue these receipts without John Barisoni's okay?
Well, it's certainly
that is a very simple question you could have asked her at the time and did not. Is that because you are fronting for Monica Martinez?
That's just not my style.
Apparently not. But that's, to me, the most obvious question. And there was just no involvement of Barisoni is necessary. I mean, it's all very nice to talk to him.
Well, and we'll resolve that to my satisfaction next week.
Well, I don't understand how you would need to do anything of the kind to understand
that
issue.
Because I need to do it for my own satisfaction of that particular answer. That's the way that I do that.
Well, I'm not saying you shouldn't do that, but I'm saying surely you understand, as a rational animal, a human being with reason, and you understand that Monica Martinez has the power today to issue these things.
I know no such thing.
Oh, you know no such thing.
I do not.
Okay, well, let me point out to you, the Homeless Service Center, wait a minute.
What the scope of her power is.
Well, then the question to have asked her is, are you telling me, Monica, you do not have the power to issue a receipt indicating that someone is on the waiting list? I cannot possibly
believe. Which is exactly the question that you would ask her and which she hasn't answered to your satisfaction.
Well, she hasn't answered it at all, but she could say to you yes, no, or maybe, particularly when confronted with a direct that way. She has said to me, actually, yes, I can issue those, but I want to consult with my staff first to see what kind of problems it would create. Now, I speak with a sarcastic tone in my voice because she said this weeks ago, told me she'd be talking with her staff 5 days later, and never got back to us on this issue. So the fact of the matter is, in rather simple terms, I think she's full of bullshit. Unless, of course, she had a mental breakdown, or maybe she went on vacation, or possibly something else, which didn't happen, because I got a letter from her which completely ignored the issue and ignored the fact that we had brought this issue up and discussed it.
So when she sends
you trotting over to Barisoni, she is, in essence, doing what she did with us at the Homeless Board of Directors meeting in August, what she did with us at City Council 2 weeks after that, and what she did with me on the phone a week and a half ago, which is to say, oh, it's not my responsibility. Go somewhere else. But it is her responsibility, and Barisoni can tell you anything he wants. The fact of the matter is, the Homeless Service Center executive director, if she wants, can issue a piece of paper that says, this person is on a waiting list. I'm sorry. I can't believe that there's any other answer to that question, and I don't think she would say there's any other answer. In fact, she hasn't. She's just said, I want to talk to my staff first before I do it. So why would she send you to Barisoni to this unless she just wanted to deflect you?
That may well be, but until I determine to my satisfaction that John Barisoni is not involved in the process, then I'm going to still involve in the process. That's what I do.
Well, you know, John Barisoni could be involved in a very meaningful way in the process, but not in this particular issue. Issuing a receipt is up to Monica Martinez. Barisoni can't order her to issue receipts because she's a part of a nonprofit. It's not a part of the law. She doesn't have to do it.
And you think that my discussion with him is just going to be restricted to this one particular area, and it wouldn't be expanded to go into other areas about why issue tickets at all, why can't we have a contact person at the Homeless Shelter Center, would you be agreeable to having a contact person at the Homeless Shelter Center,
the
police department can contact, and then you can issue those tickets at all, would you be in support of that program?
And you're thinking of asking, they're not asking.
I'm thinking of asking those very questions.
Right. Well, I'm sure he'll tell you that's up to the city
council. Well, let's let him tell me that.
Oh, whatever. You know, I mean, the fact of the matter is that he's the person who cooked up this law and presented it to the city council.
And then he's the person that I'm going to go talk to.
I know.
It's point A to point B.
I'm not saying I'm not interested in what his responses are, but the fact of the matter is I think that you have been deflected from the issue, which is to say, why isn't Monica issuing these things?
That may be so. But until I determine to my satisfaction what I think the procedures are and who does have the scope and the power to do that, then I'll just proceed in my own way.
Uh-huh.
That's what I do.
Well, be that way. You fool, you. Anyway.
But an earnest fool.
Very earnest. Right. And also a very hardworking individual. However, as I said, it seems to me that this is overly diplomatic, and I sense a kind of a politic here that
well, we
I
won't
find
have
a little
to,
distasteful.
Yeah, we won't have to wait long to find an answer. I'll be talking to him next Monday, Tuesday, and I'll be reporting back to you, and we'll see what's going on.
And if Monica is not issuing receipts during that period of time, and she may well be issuing them for all I know. I haven't yet heard, because one of the homeless people that we had hoped would go over there to do this has not been heard from. I believe you talked to him today.
Who's that?
Todd.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he was going to go out and and deal with this issue, and so far he hasn't.
I saw Todd today. Did I tell you that?
Yes, you did. You certainly did. Anyway, if
you know what he was doing? He was passing out Steve Plates for city council flyers.
I see. Well, now we get to the real motivations. And Uncle Dennis wanted to hear more about your platform for city council. I am more interested, of course, in homeless issues, but you have been quite prolific in your expenditure of time on homeless issues. You sit with me throughout these radio sessions commenting on different guests that come in, commenting on different tapes that I play, which I appreciate. And also, it seems to me you are strongly sympathetic to civil rights for poor people, in fact, for the community generally.
Well, I've been identified with homeless advocacy. I am a homeless advocate. I've never stood back from that in any candidate's forum that I participated in. In fact, interestingly enough, I saw Lynn Robinson downtown a couple of days ago. And the Good Times is sending out candidate questions, and apparently she'd received a question. And she said, did you receive your question yet? And I said, I don't think I had. Well, they'll probably give you the camping ban question. I said, you know what? I hope they do, because that's the question I want to answer. You know, and so that's my position on the camping bans. Criminalization of homelessness is a failed policy. Criminalization of homelessness can't continue. It has no logic. It has no reason. And we can do what we can to repeal that. And I've said that in every candidate's forum in which I participated. I believe it. It's an important issue to me, but it is a complex issue. It's one that requires more awareness and public debate. It's a misunderstood issue. And so in any way that I can make that, and I can clarify that issue to people, that I can put some more information in front of them, they can make a more considered opinion about what they believe homeless issues are, what homeless services should be, and what the homeless community means to the city of Santa Cruz, then until that time, I'll continue to do the kind of politics and advocacy that I think is important to make this issue understood.
In other words, you'll continue to allow yourself to be deflected from the hard questions for fear of offending people like Monica Martinez.
Of course. Little-livered politician.
I appreciate that.
I
myself was worried about offending Monica Martinez when I sent her a letter today, which I sent you a copy of, and by the way, which other people can read. I will actually read you my letter to Monica
Please.
Martinez on the air, no less, and we can catch perhaps all you listeners out there, and that includes the irascible Uncle Dennis, who's coming in at 8 o'clock with his endless ancient music on the air. You can give your thoughts on this particular issue, assuming I can find it. Ah, yes. It's called Unanswered Questions, and it reads as follows. First, my previous letter to her was something like this. Hi, just looking for follow-up on the letter you sent. I sent you last week. Now that the city council has passed the ordinance changes, which say that if there's a place on the waiting list and you are signed up for the waiting list any particular night, the city attorney shall dismiss citations. That's the ordinance change. The qualifications for restrictions regarding the waiting list are particularly relevant. That's another question, which I didn't repeat, which she hasn't answered. What are the qualifications for the waiting list? Are there restrictions for the waiting list? I got the general impression that you have to do some pretty heavy shit to get kicked off the waiting list or kicked out of the homeless service center, but nothing really specific, really terribly specific. So that question, another unanswered question. And as continuing my letter of, what's the date on this darn thing? It's September 29th, which is 2 weeks ago.
A mere two weeks ago,
although there was a previous inquiry made a month before that in late August at the Homeless Service Center Board of Directors meeting, where she gave essentially the same non-answer.
Not referenced in this letter, however?
Yeah, referenced in the...
By implication, perhaps?
No, it's referenced actually specifically.
Reading between the lines, the penumbral implication?
No, no,
okay, just curious. You'll hear.
As to the question of whether you'll be restoring the prior policy of issuing no shelter letters on those nights when that condition applied, when people come in with their citations, whether they're on the waiting list or not. What's happening with that? I'm also interested, of course, in the progress of the availability of a person or a recorded message each night specifying whether there are or not vacant beds on that night, so that a police officer won't be wasting his time writing a ticket, a homeless person won't be wasting their time trying to come in for a bed, though that usually isn't possible after the place closes at 4 o'clock anyway. Finally, the original reason I contacted Homeless Service Center recently is still unaddressed. The request for a letter specifying that, with few exceptions, there are no immediate openings on the average night at the Homeless Service Center, with the possible exception of the 3 spaces per week occurrence. She said on occasion 3 spaces on the average open up on a Wednesday sometimes at the Homeless Service Center. They are almost always filled up with waiting list people, mm-hmm. but actually there's a waiting list turnover, I think, about 12 people per week.
Are you talking just the Paul Lee Loft?
Yes.
All right. That's the 47 beds in the Paul Lee Loft.
That's
32
correct.
Men, 15 women.
Correct.
All right.
16 women.
I heard 15 today.
Well,
again,
that'll be,
perhaps they were fobbing me off on that too.
That would be 49
giving me
beds.
More inaccurate information.
Well, I mean, if you add them up, actually, it's 60 beds total, is it not? So 32
men, 15 women,
and
the correct
dogs.
The correct answer would be 47.
It's not, well, who knows what the... I've been told differently.
But perhaps they're lying to me about that, too.
They're not necessarily lying, but maybe some of the beds broke down or were removed. Maybe they had to sell them to pay for those additional police officers that are so vital
to
our public
security. Or to
pay
for the removal of the benches that they had downtown.
Or yeah, the vacant benches were possibly replaced by beds, or the missing benches, I should say. So then I said, finally, the original reason I contacted you is to request a letter specifying, with few exceptions, there are no immediate openings on the average night at the Homeless Service Center unless you are on a waiting list for which the average time is anywhere from 2 to 6 weeks. You told me you'd be meeting with your staff to confer on these issues, though, as I understand it, you have the final say. Huff is meeting today on campus, so if you have answers to any of these questions, please let me know. If not, let me know when we're going to get them. Thanks again, Robert. I think I'm being nice to her. I think I'm being mean or nasty. Pretty straightforward. I'm including my last email.
You're the very soul of congeniality.
That was the letter I wrote. Her response to that was this. Dear Robert, see, we're on first name.
Of course. Yeah.
She said, thanks for following up. See, there you go. I'm getting credit there. Now that the amendment to the ordinance has passed, this is completely irrelevant to everything I wrote, but nonetheless, let's listen to what she has to say. It will be up to the city. Oh, you see, it's not our responsibility. It's the city's responsibility to work with us to figure out how to best implement the changes. But you see, I wasn't talking about the ordinance. I wasn't talking about the changes in the ordinance. I was talking about the Homeless Service Center policies, independently of the ordinance. But she doesn't want to talk about that. She continues, I can't speak for River Street or any other local shelter provider. However, HSE is happy to work with the city, not the homeless advocates, not give a straight answer to questions put in a letter by a member of the public, but she will work with the city.
For answers to legitimate city council politicians.
Correct, and legitimate city council politicians. The city attorney, she adds, the city manager's office. If there is something we can administratively do to support their implementation of the ordinance. But unless we hear otherwise from a city official, I don't believe it is the Homeless Service Center's responsibility to take the lead on the implementation. I don't think anybody's asking her to implement anything. I think she's doing what we call diverting the issue, or else maybe she doesn't understand the issue. I don't really think, she seems a pretty intelligent woman. It's hard for me to believe she doesn't really understand the issue, but let me continue. Unless we hear otherwise, it's not a responsibility to take a lead in the implementation. It is our role to provide the highest quality services possible within our limited means, and to work with the city and other local jurisdictions, agencies to come up with solutions that better the community. This is what we call blather, foam, fluff, and horseshit. In other words, it has no substantive value whatsoever. It's not relevant to the subject. It just sort of fluffs you up very good. I'm sure that you will be kept in the loop. Oh, you see, I'm one of the people who will be kept in the loop, given the loop-de-loop, once a formal procedure has been implemented. As for your other questions, last week I was able to answer many of your questions during our phone conversation, and I think I was able to provide you with a pretty comprehensive overview of our programs, services, and challenges. Actually, she didn't answer any of the four questions that I posed. In fact, she delayed them, and that's why I repeated them, because she was going to answer them.
What was the substance of this telephone conversation to which she alludes?
Well, I asked her specifically, how did she feel about these issues? When did the policies change that you could no longer get a letter of if you were, you know, out on a particular night, got a ticket? Did you have to be on the waiting list? You didn't have to be on the waiting list before. Suddenly you do. When did it change? Why was it changed? How many spaces are there? I mean, she answered a few of the questions I asked, but none of the substantive questions I put in this letter. And therefore, her bringing up these other irrelevancies either make me feel she didn't understand what I was asking, she refused to take it seriously, or she took it seriously and just did not want to answer. And that's why you hear me get so frustrated when I hear such a shrewd and outspokenly candid individual as yourself, within the diplomatic parameters,
of course,
get fobbed off with this crap about the city attorney. Not that I have any objection to your going to the city attorney. I think it's a very hopeful thing to do, in the sense that any pressure on the city attorney is a good idea. And I think that this constitutes in its own way a form of pressure. But to suggest that this is a way of getting an answer to any of these questions is bullshit. It has nothing to do with any of the questions that have been asked. And you're saying, well, I have to find this out for myself, is also not responsive, because you don't need to go to the city attorney to get these answers. You need to look at the powers, and I believe
that I do.
Why would you agree to disagree? Why would you believe that, though?
Because
the Homeless Service Center is not run by the city attorney. Homeless Service Center is an independent entity.
The camping ban is not run by the Homeless Services Center.
No,
that's run by the city attorney.
But
the camping ban is what we're trying to repeal, what we're trying to modify, we're trying to get put aside.
Not for the answers to these specific questions, though. We're not asking about repeal. I'm glad you're finding, I'm sure we can predict what his answer is going to be about repealing the camping ban. But the issue of these particular questions, and you are kind of doing what I think Monica Martinez did. I'm talking about these specific questions. They have nothing to do with the city attorney. They have to do with Monica Martinez's policies at the Homeless
And perhaps that 3 days hence I will agree with you.
Why wouldn't
but
you
today
agree with
I don't.
Why not? See, I don't understand this. Why don't you agree with me today?
Because I'm not going to take your word for it.
Well, my word for it that the Homeless Service Center needs somehow some input from the city attorney to issue a receipt that someone's on their waiting list or not?
Exactly. You framed the question.
Why? The Homeless Service Center puts you on a list. Are you saying that the city attorney has any input at all as to whether they issue a receipt? Why would that be? How could that possibly be? They are an agency. Here's a receipt that says you're on our waiting list.
Mm-hmm.
The city attorney might not acknowledge it. The police department might not acknowledge it. But the state can still do it.
What?
It has nothing to do with
why
the city
attorney.
Why are
they issuing a receipt?
To say you're on the waiting list.
No, why are they issuing a receipt?
To say you have come in.
No, they're issuing a receipt so that when there is some arguable violation of the camping ban, they won't issue a ticket.
Now, that's an interesting point. I'm not claiming that this receipt should be the ironclad evidence for anything. I'm just saying they should issue it. That's all.
Then you're mischaracterizing the issue.
No, I'm not. Because I'm saying that this receipt would be something that the police would probably not accept, and the city attorney would probably double-check on. But it would be there. It would be issued.
And for what reason?
Well, in effect...
What earthly good could it do? People know if there's a bed open. They know if they're on the waiting list. Why do they need a receipt?
Because they want to show it to someone else to indicate that.
To whom are they going to show it? And for what reason?
Oh, they might show it to the media, for instance. I just got
for
this
receipt.
For what reason? To show that the shelter is full.
And we can't make the public aware the shelter is full by other means? You think the receipt is
the only way to do that? I think it would be a good way of doing that, to show a bunch of receipts. But the fact of the matter is the receipt would have its own value. The fact is, it would indicate that the Homeless Service Center is acknowledging that we are full that night. And here's the receipt that shows you're just on the waiting list, buddy.
The receipt that I would have issued is in pursuit of the idea that once that receipt is issued, no tickets for violation of sleeping bans will be issued. That's what I'm in pursuit of.
Well, that's nice. I don't think you're going to get anywhere with it. I approve of it. I support it. But my point is to get an honest answer from the Homeless Services Center around this issue, because I believe that through getting those honest answers, you will eventually get the kind of pressure that will
And I'm not to. Trying to pursue honest answers. I'm just being fobbed off.
You're not trying to pursue honest answers? I think you are trying to pursue honest answers in a certain sense, but I think
I shouldn't be entitled to try in my own way to pursue honest answers.
Because you say that
the answer that I'm going to get is going to be completely irrelevant to the questions being asked.
Well, I'm saying you're asking for an answer to a different question. The question you're asking is, can you give a receipt which the city attorney will respect and use to dismiss or not issue tickets?
That's precisely why I'm doing
it. And I'm saying, that's a good question, but that's not the question I was asking her and not the question I was hoping you would get an immediate answer to. I think there are two separate questions, and they can both be asked. One of them is, will you issue a receipt initially indicating you're on a waiting list? And then secondly, and this is the question you're going to explore next week, will the city attorney respect that receipt? My thought is it's good to have the receipt issued regardless of whether the city attorney commits himself to respecting it. Because
and had that been my understanding, that's exactly what I've asked Martin.
You didn't understand, obviously, my own...
Because we have two different rationales for the issuance of this receipt.
Maybe Martinez didn't understand either, because maybe that's a subtle distinction. I don't know. I mean, it's possible.
Or it's a distinction without a difference.
It is a difference.
Yeah.
There's a significant difference.
No, we have different... concept of this receipt, and I'm glad we clarified that, because that's important.
But my point is that Martinez presented with this question, although maybe she didn't understand the question, maybe she thought she had to go to the city attorney like you did, but I thought I made it pretty clear. I haven't read the prior letter, but I think I read the prior letter in another show, perhaps. But I thought I made it clear, we just want you to issue a receipt. We don't insist you get the city attorney to okay it. We don't insist you get the police to okay it. Just we want evidence that it was issued. That's all. Because that is the beginning of showing the public, the media, the city attorney, the police, that there are waiting lists but no spaces. And it's happening in significant numbers.
I wouldn't argue that. I wouldn't argue that is certainly a way to raise awareness.
And that's the point. Martinez is so
then
far...
Then that's not the argument that I was taking up with her.
Well,
that's the argument that you're taking
up with her. Well, perhaps when you next contact her, you can say, you know, Monica, thank you very much for our discussion, but what about this issue, which Mr. Norris has brought to your attention on a number of occasions, and which you have, for some reason, maybe you don't understand it, declined to give a straight answer to. Actually, her answer was, I have to consult with my staff. But then a month later, she still hasn't come up with an answer, and I think she's had, frankly, plenty of time to consult with her staff.
I couldn't argue that.
Right. So she gave me this gobbledygook answer that said, in essence, I'm not going to tell you, we're not going to send you a letter indicating that there's no space generally, we're not going to agree to issue receipts that just state where you're on a waiting list, we're not going to agree to change the policy that says, you got a ticket, tough shit, buddy, you got to have been on our waiting list, or we're not going to even say that we were full that night, even though we were full that night, and we're not going to have somebody on call, or even a recorded message on any night that says we're full. Even though, again, I wasn't asking her to get agreement with the police to respect that message. That's a much more difficult issue. I was just asking her to have a message that said we're full that night. And the reason for this, Steve, is, and I think you know it probably without my saying it, is when the cops come around, the person's sleeping outside, and they have a little statement that says, I called the homeless service center, they have no space this night, get the fuck away from me, regardless of what the ordinances say.
Mm-hmm.
That's the basis for eventually, if the police continue to harass people, a lawsuit against the Santa Cruz Police Department, the city attorney, the city manager, and whoever else is involved here, in essence, harassing homeless people, putting them through a process of cruel and unusual punishment, when they know these tickets will be dismissed. So that's the reason we want this evidence. That's the reason we want that receipt.
Well, that's not... originally why you said you wanted the receipt. You wanted the receipt to raise public awareness of the fact that there weren't any shelter beds available.
I said that to you in the
studio. So which is it?
It's both.
Okay.
But that was the...
Which is A and which is B?
Well, I would say A is the second reason that I just told you more recently.
Okay.
That's the reason we marched over there, because we were doing protests, and we wanted to essentially show the police officers, get the fuck away from us. There's no fucking space in the homeless service center. So stay away from us until you've got space, or risk the legal consequences. And suddenly the city attorney slimes in with this, well, we have a new policy that says if you're on the waiting list, you won't get a ticket. Or you'll get a ticket, but we'll dismiss a ticket. It still provides, and that's what the city attorney wants, discretion for the police to proceed and issue tickets whenever the hell they want, which they did in great numbers at this last protest. And that is sending a lot of people into trial. A number of people may go to jail because of it. That's why I get impatient with people who say, well, I'll just tiptoe over to the city attorney's office and do a little thing over there.
Now, you had some statistics about what type and how many of the sleeping ban or other loitering or homeless targeted tickets that were issued.
You saw we've actually gotten some help from a guy filing Public Records Act requests, as you know, Steve. And that only covered the period at City Hall from mid-August to mid-September.
Well, it covered it from July until mid-September. The ones that I saw. The
at
ones
City Hall. At City Hall. But remember, the protest only happened in City Hall.
But I'm just saying, in general...
We've got some stats, and so far it's... Somebody said over 300 tickets. I know it's over 100 if you include... I know it's over 50 lodging tickets, which are the serious misdemeanor tickets that require a jury trial if people want to press.
Which is a significant number.
Yeah, for sure.
We can agree.
And the fact of the matter is people face up to 6 months, maybe a year in jail, up to a $1,000 fine.
Well, any loss of liberty is significant, no question.
And the fact is they're being banned from returning to protest sites as we speak. They can't go back there. They're being held on arrest warrants for not making bail. All this because they are trying to exercise the right to sleep legally, not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere, specifically in front of City Hall to protest the sleeping ban, which seems to me to be the quintessence of the right of freedom of expression on this particular issue.
I wouldn't argue that either.
Right. So, and we're probably belaboring this too much, but I think I finally wrote her a letter today, which said pretty much what I've been saying to you before, which is, your letter indicates you've chosen not to answer some basic questions I posed in our last three meetings. The concerns below were raised at the Homeless Service Center board meeting in August, the first city council meeting in September, and a lengthy phone conversation we had soon after. You told me in that phone call, after consultation with your staff, you'd have some definite answers, implying you were sympathetic to providing honest, timely, and accurate documentation about the shelter situation in Santa Cruz. Specifically, we ask that homeless people, one, have access to written evidence of the homeless service centers being full on nights when it is, regardless of whether they're on a waiting list or not. This was previously a form letter to the courts provided to homeless people on presentation of a camping or sleeping ticket for the date in question if the shelter was full. Apparently, perhaps as a response to helping the city criminalize the Peace Camp 2010 protesters, this policy changed in midsummer to require having been on the waiting list on the date the ticket was issued. Two, we asked that homeless people and police have access to information by phone whether the shelter had beds available on any particular night. You indicated that was already the case and no big problem. So when we call tonight, will we find someone on duty or a recorded message that will provide this simple information? We probably should call from the studio to find
out. Of course.
I don't think actually I have the right number because there is no nighttime number that I have at the moment, but I'm going to look for that. We ask that homeless people and the public be provided an honest written statement about the absence of shelter beds from April 15th through November 15th. This statement would, of course, belie the City Council and SCPD's mythological claims about shelter being regularly available, not to mention the media's claims. You know the truth of this matter. Is there some problem in sharing it with the public? And then finally, we asked that homeless people get dated receipts when they sign up for the waiting list at the Homeless Service Center documenting the fact that they are on the list. Even City Council members seem to agree this was a good idea. It is both false and disingenuous to claim that these issues are a matter for the city attorney, the police, the city council, or anyone else, as you seem to suggest in your reply, and as I'm getting from certain other parties in this issue.
And we have agreed to disagree on the substance of what I think a receipt can accomplish.
I don't think you disagree with me that a receipt would indicate to a police officer, prima facie, that unless you think it's a counterfeit, that there's no that they're on a waiting list.
I believe the issue of a receipt can work to minimize the number of tickets that are issued for sleeping ban at all.
But I'm saying to you that if an officer comes by, perhaps to eliminate another Peace Camp 2010 Chapter 2 sleeper outside City Hall, and they say, Mr. Police Officer, this is a receipt. It indicates I'm on the waiting list. And the police officer then says, I don't care. My boss has said I'm giving you a ticket anyway. And they give him a ticket anyway. That can become the basis eventually, if it's done with some regularity, for a lawsuit against the police department because they're being presented with some evidence that people are on a waiting list.
So you would be disappointed if the policy changed and was directed from the city council to the police department if they issued no tickets in the presence of such a receipt? That would undermine somehow this legal protest that you're thinking about?
Not at all. I just think that is so unlikely a prospect that the only real prospect we have is deterring the police.
Unlikelier things have happened.
perhaps. But in Santa Cruz, that unlikely prospect has not happened. And what we can do is we can get from the Homeless Service, it's more likely the city can always claim, we have problems with that policy. We're not going to do it that way. But the Homeless Service Center, when it says, we won't issue a receipt, is put in a less tenable position, because why the hell not? Unless, of course, that you, the people who are asking them accept this absurd notion that they have to go talk to the city attorney about it first, which they don't.
Well, I think that I can work a change in this policy, and I believe that anybody who underestimates my political will is making a mistake.
I think your political will is impressive, but I think that you also, I really do, but I also think that your experience in this area and dealing with these people in this situation is so far somewhat limited.
And I couldn't disagree with that as well.
So we'll anyway, see how it see, my interests. Point is that if you attack these agencies individually, if you confront them individually, then they're more likely to be held accountable and to fold under pressure, because they can't go to the other person and say it's their responsibility. If you allow them to pull that number and say, go to the city attorney, and you accept that as a legitimate answer to the question that I posed, not the question that you posed apparently, but the question that I posed, you're letting them off the hook.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I would be critical of whoever did it.
Well, if the result that you're trying to achieve through this advocacy is raised awareness of the limited number of beds on a regular basis at the shelter, and so reaction to that being that let's get more beds, then you just have to go about it in the way that you're suggesting, and I think that's right.
That's not really what my objective is, although I don't mind that that would happen. My objective is to expose the illusion that there is adequate shelter, which is conveyed a lot by the media in spite of the facts.
But wouldn't awareness dissolve that illusion?
Perhaps we have some awareness from a caller. Who can this be?
Maybe Uncle Dennis again.
Hi there. You're on Free Radio, and who are you?
This is Roger Mensch.
Hey, Roger. I bet you're calling in about another issue than this silly sleeping ban that we're talking about.
Yeah, I am.
Well, Roger, I know that you are the notorious Hemporium man who is still facing criminal charges over, what, Santa Clara County for distributing medical marijuana to medical patients?
Yeah, that's correct.
And you're also concerned about the San Jose and Santa Clara crackdown on distribution centers over there as well, right?
Yeah, we were over there today doing a protest. There's 22 people that were arrested over there doing different... Well, I'm not quite sure. You know, they're doing medical marijuana, is what I understand. And so they were... Some of them were... brought to court the first time today. Most of it has been put off until the 28th of this month.
And whose court is it in, and what time is that going to happen?
You know, actually, I don't know whose courtroom it is, but it's down at Levi Courthouse.
At the who courthouse?
It's called Levi Courthouse.
Uh-huh.
It's I believe it's 115 Terrain Street.
Is that the criminal court's annex?
Well, this is drug court.
Okay.
This is where, you know, I was going at first, and then when you move from there to the superior courts, and then move you downtown.
Have they experienced a crackdown on the medical? It's Steve Plach, kind of for city council in Santa Cruz, you know. Have they had any crackdown on the medical marijuana dispensaries, such as they've had widespread instances in L.A.?
Well, no. These are more delivery services
uh-huh.
that they've cracked down, evidently. You know, I don't know all the information regarding actually any of the businesses other than talk to a couple people today.
So what are they being charged with, transportation or something?
I believe transportation and sales. And the attorney spoke. Channel 2 News was down there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they were talking, and they feel that, you know, What the cops are doing is, you know, it's definitely not making easier access to medical marijuana.
No, of course not.
And, you know, they want to put all these different restrictions on the business. And there's different type of businesses, the collectives, the cooperatives, the storefronts. And some of them operate completely different than a storefront.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But just like myself, I wasn't a storefront. I had two patients that lived here, and, you know, we grew here as well.
And here being in Felton, right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You know, not now. You know, I haven't been in business since I've been arrested.
And now you were closed down twice by Bob Lee, and then the third time you're facing charges because of Santa Clara County sheriffs, or?
Santa Clara and San Jose.
And
they
both
played a part in raiding my place.
And they're claiming that you sold to people who had inadequate documentation, or that the very act of being a collective selling to medical marijuana patients who are not, you know, intimately part of the caregiver deal is illegal. What was their claim in shutting you down?
Well, they were saying I was acting as a caregiver, which I was not. I mean, I was a caregiver to two people, and those people resided here. But as you know, the Emporium is a collective, and, you know, we'll have to raise that defense that people signed up, and, you know, there's a list of things that they did here.
And they had medical marijuana, not prescriptions, but recommendations?
Yeah, they all had valid doctor recommendations. Even the undercover went out and got an illegal recommendation. If anybody, they should be going after the doctor, in my eyes. But, I mean, they shouldn't even be doing this.
Well, that is an interesting thing you bring up, because this is something I know that in Santa Cruz County, Bob Lee's office claims, and DAs and other areas claim, that throughout the state, medical marijuana cannot be sold at distribution centers in a retail way unless you're a caregiver, which I think is a bunch of crap. And I think Pebbles Trippett, who's been on the air and talked about this, a Mendocino Marijuana Medical Advisory Board member, has said is also belied by recent court decisions. But it still seems to be the ongoing policy of Bob Lee, our district attorney, and also of the, unless, of course, you know, they're a favored distribution center like Greenway and Limekiln, the two clubs that are legal in Santa Cruz in the sense that they're only legal because the DA decides not to go after them, but does go after the Emporium, right?
Yeah, and they go after people that aren't very well funded, newly operating businesses. And instead of, you know, we got issues here where the police didn't do proper search. And, you know, they should be in violation. And they're trying to say, I'm in violation. They don't know anything about it. You know, they've been after me for 5 years. They were pissed off that they had to return a couple pounds of marijuana back in 2006.
Which was spoiled when you got it back, right?
Oh, yeah. It was spoiled, but, you know, what they did in that case was when I was in jail for 7 days, and they were going to release me that Friday. We were in court that morning. Before they released me, the detective and attorney, went to another judge, got another search warrant, said nothing about medical marijuana in it, came here and kicked in all my doors, cut everything down, and then left me out of jail later that day.
This was in the second series of cases that you had that were that went to the unfortunate Minch decision, which was a bad decision as far as medical marijuana people go, right?
Yeah. This is my first case, you know, when the Supreme Court overruled it, they made terrible law.
On the first case, not the second case. And, yeah. and what was bad about that law? Refresh my memory.
Well, they denied caregiver defense. And the appellate court ruled that I should have been given one.
And
all three judges in the appellate court agreed that I should have been given it. It was certified for publication. And
mm-hmm.
then all the seven Supreme Court justices said, oh, no, that's not right.
Well, so what's the story? Is a caregiver defense, isn't that still a defense in California? Has that been subsequently overruled by another Supreme Court decision?
No. A caregiver defense is still there. It's just that, you know, my case clarified it to where, you know, there was this gray area of continuous, you know, be a caregiver, you have to give continuous care, either in house health or housing and
well,
safety.
Was that decision decertified at some point?
Yeah, well, I mean, the appellate court had to reverse its...
No, but the California Supreme Court decision is the one that stands now, right?
Yeah.
But I mean,
for you to be a caregiver, you have to be taking care of that person prior to any marijuana connection.
But can you be a collective as distinguished from a caregiver?
Yeah, I don't see why.
I mean, what I'm saying is, did the court rule in a subsequent case? Because this is what I'm thinking that I recall from my conversations with Pebbles Trippett. Can you not be a caregiver, but still be a collective that sells marijuana to other members of the collective, even though you're not a caregiver? Is that still a defense that's applicable?
Yeah, that is.
But that was one you didn't use, and therefore you got screwed, right?
Well, yeah. And then the Supreme Court ruled on those issues, too, and said that because I didn't use the word collective when I was talking about the Emporium, you know, we weren't allowed to talk about the Emporium, for one, but that wasn't a defense we used.
So it was
probably the defense we should have used.
So it's pretty technical shit. It sounds like, you know, your attorney in this case was the infamous Ben Rice.
In my second case.
But not your first case.
No, that was done, Public Defender's Office in Santa Cruz, Amy Buontello.
Do you think it was incompetence on the public defender's office, or what's your feeling? Is that too strong a word, or what?
No, I don't. Well, I think we used a, improper defense. You know, hindsight's 20/20. At that time, everything was really unclear. I formed a Emporium to try to cover all the bases of legality.
But you didn't use the word collective in the defense. But subsequently, People v. Kelly was a decision that came down last year or the year before. Are you familiar with that decision?
Yeah, I don't know specifics about it.
I don't either. I was hoping you did. I am looking at the story on the Americans for Safe Action website about your protest, because that's what you called in about, the protest today, medical marijuana patient advocates to hold San Jose protest. It states that... they're in response to aggressive law enforcement actions over the past 2 weeks by several local police departments and the State Bureau of Narcotics Enforcement. So-called investigation, which resulted in the arrest of nearly two dozen medical marijuana patients and providers on October 1st and 7th, is cynically referred to by law enforcement as Operation Up in Smoke. We demand that the Santa Clara County DA immediately drop the charges, said Lauren Vasquez, director of the Silicon Valley chapter of ASA. In a democratic society, we develop laws that protect our sickest people and not leave them susceptible to police harassment and criminal prosecution. Police officers posed as sick patients claiming immobility and homelessness in order to entrap medical marijuana delivery services, many of which were family-run businesses. How many services were actually impacted here or under indictment?
I don't know how many services. I know there was 22 people that were...
Are they in jail still, or have they been released, OR, or on bail? What's the story with
that? Well, some of them are released. I'm not sure about everybody. I did talk to some. There's a couple that there isn't any charges. There's a couple of people that didn't go in front of the judge today. But they have to return the 28th, and I believe we'll be there to give them support. And as well as my my trial is coming up in Maurice, November 15th. And we'll see what happens there.
And you are facing what? How many felony counts?
I think they got me on 9 felony counts. 3 sales, 3 transportation, 3 cultivation.
And how much marijuana is actually involved in this?
Oh, we're talking about an ounce and a quarter.
No, holy cow.
And this is, of course, not going to be impacted at all by Proposition 19, right?
Well, we don't know that. You know, we don't know exactly all
the implications.
Well, I mean,
at least in terms of the actual law, it doesn't change it, though. I mean, they might change their mind.
It is possible, and it depends on the wording of the initiative, that some initiatives can be retroactive.
No. I mean, everything over an ounce is not covered by this initiative. It's very simple. I don't know that there's any...
But I didn't sell over an ounce. It was a quarter ounce,
oh, I see.
And then
okay.
It was an ounce.
So the sales counts may be impacted if the initiative passes.
you know, if it's changed to an infraction, then why would somebody?
Well, it wouldn't be changed to an infraction. It would be made legal if you sold.
Oh,
to
yeah,
people,
yeah.
If you
yeah,
sold
yeah.
to people sure. under, you know, over 21, and it was under yeah. an ounce, that's, well, it depends. You would have to, actually, that's not true. You would have to have a license to sell, and since licenses were not issued, you're shit out of luck, buddy.
Well, they could all make that all retroactive.
They could make it retroactive, I guess, but I don't think it is. We don't know if it is.
We don't know because we don't know the wording initiative.
We don't have the wording yeah. of the initiative in front of us. We're talking with Roger Minch, who is going to trial himself for selling, transporting, and cultivating more or less around an ounce, a little more than an ounce, maybe selling a little less than an ounce, to people with medical marijuana documentation in nine felony counts. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
And that's on November
15th?
Thank you.
November 15th.
And that's going to be at what time and what court?
You know, well, in my case, I was in jail over there for 5 months without bail. Then it was set at $105,000. We were lucky to get it lowered down to $55,000. I see most of these people that were arrested here, they're on like either two charges or something, and their bail is about $30,000.
Is that, you're talking about Santa Cruz County or Santa Clara County?
Santa Clara County.
Okay. Santa Clara County.
Where did they have you? You got Elmwood or downtown?
No, I was down in Elmwood.
Oh, were you? Okay.
And then, you know, I went in to get a supervised OR hearing a couple months ago. It was over a year and my bail was up. And I told my attorney, this newly appointed attorney, that, you know, I've been out of business since I've been arrested. And he refused to tell the judge that.
No.
And the prosecutor said, I'm still making a ton of money, and, you know, I'm filing for disability and all that stuff. And, you know, instead of getting OR'd or supervised OR, they give me another $50,000 bail.
Great. Is right. ASA supporting you, Americans for Safe Action? Are they coming to your trial and so forth?
Well, they will be.
I know that you also are working with, you established a chapter of ASA here in Santa Cruz.
Yeah, that's correct.
And they are meeting how regularly and where are they meeting? Give us some information on that.
Well, we meet the fourth Thursday of the month. We have been meeting over at near Greenway, next to Greenway. But it's going to move this time. We're not quite sure where we're going to go. We'll keep people posted on it. We'll probably go down to the Nelson Center, I think.
Loudon Nelson Center, that'd be more centrally located.
Yeah.
Now, are more people joining, or is it trailing off? How's the membership coming on that?
Well, you got some come, some go. You know, we probably we got enough members for a chapter.
That's a great collectivist model.
What's
some
that?
Come, some the great collectivist model. Some folks come and some folks go.
Well, you know, it's really hard here in Santa Cruz, whatever reason, to get people together.
Yeah.
But we do have, you know, there are people that are coming continuously. We were down at WAM Festival. We had a booth there as well as down at Greenway's barbecue that they had. We had a booth there as well. So
a good turnout, a small turnout. What's your feeling?
When we were down there?
Yeah, at the WAM Festival and at the barbecue.
Well, I was told I wasn't able to make it, that they felt that there wasn't as many people as last year. That,
less turnout than they'd hoped.
It was a good turnout, evidently.
What about Proposition 19? What does the local ASA think about, the local Americans for Safe Action chapter, think about the proposition that would make it legal to cultivate, transport, et cetera?
We're, you know, as Americans for Safe Access, I believe we're neutral on that.
And what's your feeling about it personally?
Well, there's the pros and cons, you know.
Yeah, I agree,
If they legalize it, then there's no probable cause to search. And,
correct.
You know, there's a lot of things that go away, but then there's, you know, this piece of legislation that they just passed that says that
if you
smoke around a minor, it'll be an infraction.
That'll be made worse. It'll go up to a felony in some cases and a misdemeanor in others.
Well, from the legislation that the governor just signed, my understanding is that it would be considered a a citational offense to smoke in front of a minor, which would change the 3 or 4 years they're talking about in Prop 19.
As I understand it, Prop 19, it'll change the governor's it'll change the legislation passed by the legislature and signed by the governor, because the initiative overrules, you know, the legislative action. So if Proposition 19 says if you smoke in the presence of a minor, or if you give anything, and a minor is anybody under 21, then it becomes a serious crime, more so than an infraction or a citable misdemeanor. You know,
the governor's intent was clearly to undermine Prop 19 by signing this legislation, and convincing people, oh, we've already got this more broad approach to marijuana, so why do we need to pass an initiative that's going to be applied statewide?
Right, but I think the point here is that 19 will essentially change this infraction back to a misdemeanor and a felony for those who are...
I don't think
21.
That's the case.
That's my understanding.
I may be wrong.
Yeah, well, that's one of the main criticisms of it, and I've seen debates between Chris Conrad, he's a supporter of 19. I don't know who. There's a number of people on the pro-19 side. You can go onto Google and you can actually see video debates between pro and anti-19 people. I don't mean anti-19 cops or anti-19 DAs. I mean people on the left, medical marijuana patients, who are concerned that 19 guts Proposition 215. They're concerned about that possibility, and there's some you know, real controversy, and honest people disagree about this, and we're trying to work this out on the air. For those listeners who are interested, tune in on Sunday around noon. Pebbles Trippett and I are going over it, kind of not so much line by line, but argument by argument, to try to come to some conclusions about what the actual wording of the law is. Right now, the purposes and intents section says it doesn't overrule Proposition 215, the medical marijuana law, but the actual wording of the law as passed under a Proposition 19 does not include the exemptions of Proposition 215. So it could be that 215, the basic 1996 initiative, mm-hmm. is going to be overruled in some respects, that you'll only be able to grow in a 5x5 area, that you will not be able to sell to friends, for example, or to provide for caregivers. You will have to be licensed and pay to be licensed in ways that medical marijuana places are currently not so required. So those are issues that, you know, we have to talk about.
Just out of curiosity, when you have your meeting on the fourth Thursday, which would be, I guess, the 28th of this month, and if you have it at Loudoun Nelson, are those the kind of things that you would be discussing amongst yourselves if somebody came to...
Well, we had somebody come in and speak on Prop 19.
Uh-huh.
Pro or con?
Last month.
Pro or con? Both? Both. Both?
Did you give a balanced argument about it? Or?
He did. He came in as a pro 19.
Oh, okay.
But there was no anti-19 people talking yet.
We haven't had any anti.
This could be your opportunity, Steve. Get in there. And
I'm not anti-19.
Well, then you're not going to be a good anti-19 spokesman.
I was just curious because I would like to come and support the chapter on the 28th. I'm very interested in doing that, but I was just wondering what the substance of the discussion would be.
There's, you know, federal money coming into the county, and, you know, probably the next protest we do will be money coming in, so we'll probably be talking about that. I'm not quite sure everything else is going to be on the agenda.
That's interesting in its own right. So are you fairly certain it's going to be on the fourth Thursday, which would be the 28th?
That'll be at 7 o'clock in Loudoun Nelson, probably. Or
I have to check with some other people, but
okay.
Anybody who's interested can, of course, get on your emailing list. How can that happen, Roger?
You can give me your email, or you can send me your email if you want to do that.
Tell the listeners how they can get on the Americans for Safe Action email list.
Well, if you go to AmericansForSafeAccess.org and on that website, we'll show you how you can become a member and get on that email list.
Mm-hmm.
But usually people that show up at the meetings, we pass around a sign-in sheet. And that's how they get added to our email list.
I was wondering what you, how you're going to finish that sentence. Where they pass around the sign-in sheet?
here, have another toke, Steve.
we were holding our breaths here. How that was going to end up. Yeah.
All right. Well, we're talking with Roger Mensch. For, that's right. You want to say something, Roger? Go ahead.
You want to give me your email? I can put you on. Robert can have it. Send it to me.
Oh, you can give me. I can give you my email. It's just splech@gmail.com.
And spell pleach.
SPLEICH. And I'd love to have anything you could forward to me.
And in fact, Steve is a candidate for the Santa Cruz Shitty Council, as I like to denounce them. And he will answer any and all of your questions about various platforms he or may not have. Uncle Dennis, for example, might be interested in getting in touch with you in detail, since we're only talking about marijuana and homeless issues at the moment. Perhaps other issues of fiscal importance, like, printing money locally for Santa Cruz. Who knows what else?
Cruise cash.
That email is SPLECH
@gmail.com.
And I would appreciate anything you could forward my way. I'm very interested.
Okay.
Before you go, the dates for you are November 14th for your own trial, and then
November 15th, I think you said.
15th, thank you. Is that
right?
Yes. It is November 15th.
October 28th. Evidently, these guys down in Santa Clara are gonna. We're gonna be there again to support those people, and then our trial is supposed to begin November 15th, although we believe it will be put off again.
How big was the rally today?
There must have been 30 people.
That's not bad. And how many joints were passed around?
Nope.
Oh, dear. People are afraid. That's how it is these days.
And, a couple of the attorneys thought the legal liaison for ASA was there and helped with the cameras.
I giggle about this, about passing around a joint, but in San Jose, medical marijuana patients are allowed to smoke, are they not, in public, if they are 1,000 feet away from a children's facility, whatever the hell that is. There's actually...
I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, that's part of SB 420, and I think it may even be Proposition 215 may overrule that further and say if you're doing it for medical purposes, you can smoke it, unless there's no smoking in the area. And even if there is no smoking, it may be an exception for people engaging in medical smoking. But don't take my word for it. Parse the law and talk to the San Jose Police Department, I guess.
Yeah, that's good advice.
Roger, thank you for calling in. Is there anything more you want to say? I'm going to talk a little bit more about this article, which people can read more about it if they go to safeaccessnow.org, and there's an article, Medical Marijuana Patient Advocates to Hold San Jose Protest, and it talks in more detail about the specifics of the bust that went down. But it's just all horrendously absurd and vicious. It's just, it kind of stops me in my tracks to hear five months in jail for you again. You were in jail before, right?
Well, I did 5 days, 7 days, and this one was about 6 months this last time, and they want to still give me 3 years prison.
And again, it's because you didn't have, because they were essentially kidnapping you and holding you for ransom, because they were claiming you were going to flee the jurisdiction.
They wanted to push their own agenda, which they're trying to do. There was no clubs over in Santa Clara County when I got arrested.
And now there are how many?
I don't know, at least 70.
Wow, really?
Well, congratulations. Your arrest may have spurred people, or let's put it this way, maybe the climate is changing so that, you were the forerunner, So.
Yeah. I'm hoping, and that was one of the reasons we wanted to push the trial further, is to change the mindset of the jurors.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually, you have nothing to do with Santa Clara County, really. You're over in Felton, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
So it's just, it sounds like they're just, I don't know what the hell they're doing. And it's just giving these bizarre officials the power to reach in and rip people out of their lives, steal their money, steal their medicine. It's just,
I understand what they're doing now down here is that, instead of arresting you, they just come in with a search warrant, cut down all your stuff, take your money. And if you want it back, then they'll press charges. That sounds like Nazi tactic.
That's exactly what the drug war is, not to mention the war on terror and the war on the homeless, in my view. But
yeah, sure.
Roger, thank you for being on the air, and I know it's we've had to kind of coax you on, and you've been real busy, and you've finally been able to get through to us, and I appreciate you calling in, man.
Yeah, thank you, and I'll try to keep you updated.
All right, thank you, Roger.
That would be great, man.
Pleasure.
A pleasure.
Take care, Roger.
All right.
Bye-bye. Phone lines are open, 427-3772 is the call-in number. You are listening to the Steve Plate Show on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Steve has become such a frequent figure here that whether he wins or whether he loses big or loses small in the city council race, he is going to be one of our laughing figures here. If you can afford, of course, to become a member of the Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Good nature
collective.
To a fault, they say.
Intolerant of Monica Martinez is nonsense, I might also add. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert and Steve.
Hey.
Drum Circle Dave.
How are you?
Well, I'm hanging in there, you know.
I'm doing all right myself.
Well, that's good. It's Thursday, so I guess there was a drum conga line yesterday along the frontage path of the levee.
Oh, yeah.
How many people?
It was great, man. We didn't have any local authority come by as far as, like, I was there about 3 o'clock, maybe 4.
Now, how many people were there who were, you know...
I didn't see any cops come by, but not that they could have came by earlier. It was set up.
How many drummers? How many drummers or... other participants?
Oh, 25.
Oh, great.
Well, that sounds good. Although, again, the idea of cramming everybody into a little space right off to the side of the levee's concrete walkway has always seemed to me to be a sad end for a drum circle that used to be a central event next to the farmer's market.
Well, that's true, but we're really getting it together out there. It's a nice spot now. The smell is gone. There was a bad smell there. Now it's gone. So someone took care of that, and it's been real nice, Rob. I was hoping you'd come by.
Well, you know, I'd like to, but if I associate with your ilk, I might lose my rep with Monica Martinez and City Attorney John Barasone, and if I'm going to be...
Well, what's up? What's their problem? Are they percussion or just
I think they're
beat to a different drum?
They are drum heads, pretty much.
They have different drums?
I would say that,
like,
they want to drum it into the rest of us, that we'd better either... Actually, I'd say Barasone is beating the drum and Monica Martinez is dancing to his tune. It would be my...
They're marching to the beat of a very different drummer.
Extremely different drummer, yeah. No, actually, I thought about coming yesterday. I actually came into town. A friend of mine had her car towed yesterday from your friend's CVS parking lot for a grand total.
Oh, man. Yep. Friggin' express towing on Ocean Street.
$265
or whatever it is, right down there by Starving on the right. Man, I mean, that is a bummer, man.
Yeah, apparently I talked to the tow company, which is this little tow company on Ocean Street.
Yes, and it is just like that man is insane.
Looks
and
like a
so
fly.
Is CBS.
It's a fly by night little company. It looks like it has a sort of this storefront that was. Looks like they set it up like, and they're ready to leave at any moment. But
it's a chop shop for sure.
They're right next to an auto repair place. But
that's right. Just
conveniently located.
For chopping.
But, you know, they said they get 5 to 10 toes.
I'm telling you, it's a racket.
CVS, the parking lot.
Is that right?
It's a racket,
well, maybe I'm
man.
Wrong. Maybe it's 5
I'm telling you, CVS has no heart. Whoever that manager is, he needs to be walk the line like Johnny Cash.
Well, you know, they're just the towing company. It's the service, the security service that runs that area, that runs around giving people... They don't tell you you're about to be towed. They just tow you. And the name of that, I wrote down the name of that service, service is an interesting and ironic way of...
I mean, Santa Cruz used to be so beautiful, man.
Santa Cruz.
Companies used to say, hey, you know, are you down and out? You know, can you move your car? You know, we'll let it stay. You know, they'd come out and put a note on your car, you know? You there, Rob?
Yeah, I'm here. Santa Cruz Peninsula Security is the name of the culprits who call up and have you towed away. And it's So if anybody wants to look into them further, their phone number is 728-7222.
Those are the folks that walk around and chalk your tires?
I think so. I think so. Yeah.
They look very official when they're doing that.
They could be very official, but probably Monica Martinez has nothing to do with it.
I could ask her.
Probably you could.
But I'd get fobbed up, but I could ask her.
I don't know. You might want to make sure. She might refer you to City Attorney John Barisone.
Perhaps.
Any case, Dave, anything more that you wish to pass on to us before we pass on you?
Well, yeah, you know, man, I think they ought to fire up every tow truck in the company and tow everybody's car who has money home so they can't buy gas, and I'm sure BP and all these other mongrels up there would love that. You know, I mean, that's a good idea, right? You know, get, you know, solar-powered tow trucks to tow gas burners off the road one day, every day. Forever.
Perhaps.
And see
but
how
let,
much
let me
gas
ask you,
they can sell
let me ask you, Dave,
to
let me
cars
ask,
that don't get towed, which most of them will be towed, so there. I mean,
yeah, well, you got a tow hole
like,
there, but I don't...
I'm totally against towing. I think they should just abolish tow trucks as far as only use
this
for
is not really... I'm going to try to...
life situations and
non-emergency
functions.
Because
you
tow
need
trucks
to
don't,
stop these tow trucks.
Let's leave the tow truck issue for another time, but ask you, what about unreasonably disturbing noise downtown? Have people been getting tickets for playing drums or guitars that you've heard in the last week or two?
I saw Bob Noxious, and I think he's still playing down on the mall. Now, I didn't see Tamarack.
Right, but you haven't heard any reports of new tickets issued?
No, no one's come up to me and said, hey, I got a ticket.
Because I have spoken with activist Tom Noddy, who was one of the people behind the Street Performers Guild this summer, and there may be, although I have no news one way or the other, a meeting of the Street Performers Guild soon, or there may be. I'm trying to find out what's going on to get more information, so I might pass that on if such a meeting is held.
Yeah, thank you. I'll show up if there is one. Again.
All right, I'll pass on the word to you. And how can people get in touch with you, Dave, if they want to report concerns about the, police around musicians downtown?
Oh, they can email me at trackintrack, that's TRACKINTRACKS@yahoo.com.
Track and tracks.
Track inside a track.
You
yeah.
got it.
Track
and
track. Yep, I'm right in a track.
Well, thank you, Dave, and trek on, as they say.
Yes, and hey, Rob, you folks take it easy, 420, and don't forget to fire up one whenever you can or wherever you can.
And thank
and
you,
I
Dave.
Sure hope they legalize this Prop 19 law. I'm really, I want it legal, not for just companies, but for people themselves.
Thank you, Dave. And that was Drum Circle Dave with his usual Thursday evening report. Phone lines are open for you to make your report, because we'll take it, 427-3772. I'm realizing that in my endless monologue about Monica Martinez and all that shit, which probably should have been condensed to a two-minute statement, I failed to ask you what else you may have learned or experienced today at the open house of the Homeless Services Center. How many folks showed up there?
I would say there were probably, 200 or 300 people.
Wow.
It was a big crowd.
Large
crowd. And they served lunch to everybody who was there.
Homeless
and
homely. And
they had hamburgers, hot dogs, huge hamburgers.
Vegan burgers.
All the homeless folks were lined up all the way down the complete length of the front of where they have the lockers and where the Paul Lee loft door is.
Any police officers in evidence?
Interim Chief Kevin Vogel was there.
Oh, dear. In uniform?
He was. Steve Clark was there.
Oh, dear.
They were the only police presence. Curtis Relliford, my good friend from the Katrina Relief, was there. I met Roland Rebelais. I was telling you,
he's a terrific guy. He's the guy behind the Rebelais Family Shelter.
He and his wife, Pat.
However, and he wrote a good letter, I think, to the paper.
Your good friend, Catherine Byers, was there asking about you.
Council member and former mayor, that's correct.
Don Lane, of course.
Don Lame, as I like to call him.
He was there.
Yeah, we had Birdseed Byers and Don Lame.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Linda LeMaster was a presence.
Lighthouse Linda LeMaster, occasional guest on this show, former chair of the Homeless Issues Task Force.
Todd Hill,
a longtime Peace Camp 2010 activist, a failed petitioner.
And several of the folks from HPHP, Darren, if you know Darren, was there, the homeless folks down at the Paul Lee Loft.
By the way, this is a sort of a secondary issue. I was reading in the San Francisco Chronicle yesterday, perhaps, or maybe today, that the governor signed a bill legalizing or making it easier for people to provide healthcare professionals to provide, what is it, Neoproxen, Neolane, the drug that's used to counter heroin overdoses and opiate overdoses.
Naloxone.
Thank you, Naloxone. And I understand Santa Cruz is one of the 9 counties where it is currently being distributed.
Mm-hmm.
And so Santa Cruz is leading the charge. I know that there was a split in the Santa Cruz, in SCAP, Santa Cruz, what's the proper?
Santa Cruz AIDS Project at one time operated the Santa Cruz County Needle Exchange. When SCAP lost its funding due to budget cuts from the state, they discontinued their harm reduction program, which is the umbrella program under which they had Needle Exchange. Some friends of mine decided to step into the breach and form their own Needle Exchange because it's such an important public health issue here in Santa Cruz. So they asked me to come on board. I think I probably told the story before, and help them with their first grant. Now they're running a full Needle Exchange 4 nights a week, actually I think 3 nights, and Sunday we're up at Emmeline. They also have Jean, nurse from HPHP, is on site on Thursday nights at the Barson and Bixby to give you some advice about wound care and things like that. But they have also been talking up the Naloxone availability to people who are intravenous drug users. So they would prevent. It's an opiate inhibitor, neuro inhibitor.
Acts pretty quickly.
It acts very quickly, in fact. But it's important that they're doing some sublingual, actually, applications now.
Meaning right under the spine.
Right under the tongue. Because some people just really don't like needles. And so there are some folks who use drugs who don't use needles, in fact. There are many.
Mm-hmm.
So actually Santa Cruz County is, you know, through Street Outreach Supporters, which is the current needle exchange here, is getting out as much information and awareness as possible about the availability of Naloxone.
Now, we passed so-called Heroin Hill, sneeringly referred to by my the companion who drove down with me from Felton this evening, which has become a big, for some days in the paper, it was a big shindig, cause celebre scare story, smear the homeless, smear the campers in the Poganip, boost the fortunes of Take Back Santa Cruz and so forth, the group that's concerned with supposedly public safety, but actually I think homogenizing and gentrifying a lot,
mm-hmm,
under the excuse of public safety. Heroin overdoses, the primary overdoses, are of prescription opiates, as I understand it. The second largest death toll is opiates, but most of those deaths come from prescription opiates. Isn't that correct?
I couldn't say statistically whether that's true.
Mr. Harm Reduction, Needle Exchange Man.
But it certainly makes sense, given the generally mediocre strength of street heroin and the purity of OxyContin. You have a lot of people who are shooting OxyContins, things like that.
I expect you to get some stats.
I would not be at all surprised if that were the case.
But you have not got any hard figures, in spite of your many years of working on this.
Well, I don't claim to be an expert. I just claim to be
a hard worker.
A public servant.
You are a public servant, unfortunately. As a singer from a public serpent.
But my friends that do our outreach, in fact, I think I've talked to this about you this before, who do the outreach in the Poganip, tell me that the drug activity in Poganip is down significantly from what it has been in the past. I don't know really what you can attribute that to, but I know that at some point the city is formulating a program where it's going to try to open up Poganip to more rail trail passage, make it a back entrance to UCSC, so that's being considered. I don't think...
Put in some little knick-knack shops, perhaps?
Well, you know, I
first
don't,
alarm
yeah.
security guard.
If, in fact, drug retailing is down in the Poganip from the times of the heyday of the Heroin Hill article and things like that, which I think may have even been overstated at the time, it may be in reaction to that proposed opening up of the Poganip. And I don't really know, but there are changes happening in the Poganip. If anybody's interested in the Poganip itself, either as a source of drug retailing and to find out what's going on up there or what the reaction is for the citizens, the police, or whether or not this trail is going to go through, I would certainly recommend getting as much information about the Poganip and what's going on there as possible.
Now, though I don't normally do this because I believe boosting candidates on this show is not just a waste of time, but creates the illusion of change when the substance is missing. Nonetheless, in your case, because I've seen you on the streets doing work for homeless civil rights, I think that you're going to be continuing that work after November 3rd in spite of your overwhelming defeat that is going to be happening on that date. Nonetheless, I want to hear what you, can you give us a summarize your platform in terms of the most significant issues you feel that, and you probably should table them to some extent to what you think the Free Radio Santa Cruz audience is interested in, rather than, you know, technical issues of finance and so forth.
Well, I think Free Radio Santa Cruz listeners would probably be interested in whether or not we're going to be energy sustainable, whether we're going to be water sustainable, that kind of thing, whether or not we're going to have any programs that are going to incentivize solar installations, for instance, in the city, and I think that we are. Santa Cruz in 2007 initiated a green building program, which does incentivize the installation of solar panels, solar heating, rainwater catchment systems, gray water reuse,
things
like that.
What percentage of the budget actually gets involved with this shit? Isn't 60% go to fire and police?
About 64.
So are you interested in cutting that back to a more reasonable amount?
You know what? I don't know enough about the budget to tell you where there are certain, there can be cuts. In, you're talking about cuts in service to fund increases in programs.
How about cutting back the salaries of top officers in the government, top police officers, city managers, city attorney?
Well, and that has been a question that we have been given in many candidates for. They said, well, how would you maximize services while minimizing costs?
Top from the top.
And exactly. That's what everybody says. Easier said than done, of course. I think that we are top-heavy in management in the city. I think that there can be some management cutbacks, some reductions in force, some early retirements, and put the money on the street where the people are actually performing the services. That's where the money should be. But right now, I think we are top-heavy in management. It's my understanding.
Kevin Vogel, the acting police chief, was the key figure, a key figure in the scandal involving political surveillance of the DIY do-it-yourself last night parade organizing, which is now being savagely attacked by the city attorney through the prosecution of Wes Modes for the crime of walking in a parade on December 31st, 2009 that had no permit. Of course, the DIY parades have never had a permit, have never applied for a permit, and as far as I'm concerned, have never needed a permit. Yet Kevin Vogel, back in 2005, 2006, not only authorized the political surveillance undercover of this group, sent in undercover agents and so forth, he then engaged in an investigation of his own surveillance and found himself not guilty of any kind of misconduct. It has to be said, Mayor Cynthia Matthews, City Manager, then City Manager Dick Wilson, Police Chief Howard Scarry, all agreed.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, Police Auditor Bob Aronson, otherwise unremarkable as a local hack who essentially okayed everything the police department did, as far as I could see, or made no serious complaints about anything in the last decade, objected to this because he felt that this, you can't really have people accused of misconduct investigating their own misconduct. That, even though Cynthia Matthews okayed it, even though Dick Wilson okayed it, even though Martine Bernal had no objection. He's our new city manager, and he was assistant city manager at the time. So Kevin Vogel is now our acting police chief.
They call him an interim chief.
Indeed. He was acting, and now he's interim.
He's interim.
And he was involved in the behind-closed-doors meetings of a group of people who decided to push through the go to City Hall after 10 o'clock, get arrested if you don't leave, or get cited and then arrested if you don't leave. Closing of City Council, City Hall grounds, not the case in any other city in California that I'm aware of, although I haven't, frankly, researched it, and not the case in Santa Cruz for decades. In fact, never before have I heard this was done. When they last tried to do it in 96, Judge Stevens said, no, people have a right to be on the City Hall grounds at night. This was done behind closed doors by Vogel and his co-department heads, those highly paid individuals who you did not specify you would chop from the top. You made some vague statement about managerial cutbacks somewhere, but not specifically about these particular city officials. Would you, this is my question,
all right,
vote to against the candidacy of Deputy Chief Kevin Vogel, assuming, of course, that the option was not,
well,
Steve Clark?
Organizationally, the city council, which I'm going to become a member, is a legislative. is a legislative body.
Sorry, go ahead.
The executive is the city manager. The city manager is the one that will determine whether or not they'll hire Kevin Vogel.
I'm asking whether you support this guy as police chief or not.
From my experience of having spoken with Kevin Vogel on two occasions, and generally discussed the changing dynamic of law enforcement in the city, what I believe should be some law enforcement priorities, what I think should be some new programs to help community policing and volunteer policing, things like that, he seems to agree with the things that I think that are best for the city in terms of law enforcement. So on that basis, yes, I would support it.
And what are those things that you two agree on? I'm beginning to get a little nervous here.
He seems to think that there should be a much closer relationship between the community and the police department. He believes there should be more community policing, more kind of cops on the beat kind of things. He also believes in volunteer policing, a low-level volunteer, citizen volunteers who take post-training, police officer standard training, and then are in the community, in the neighborhoods, conducting low-level police activities, basically policing their own neighborhoods.
All these things, of course, can be a part of a right-wing vigilante police involvement, which goes after poor people, criminalizes homeless people, and, of course, is used as part of the drug war. Did you ask him any specifics about the drug war, whether he favors ending that absurdity?
That hasn't been the substance or subject of our discussions to date.
Get to it.
Yeah, well, I only have so much time to talk to him, and he's a busy man, and so am I. So we'll
what
have
percentage of police activity is involved in the drug war? I would say probably a significant percentage. If you're not discussing that, you're ignoring the elephant, you know, in the bedroom.
I think the elephant hasn't appeared in our bedroom yet, but when it does, we'll certainly discuss it.
The elephant is in the bedroom, whether you're closing your eyes to it or not.
Says you.
Oh, come on. You know, I mean, all right, do you want me to bring the stats into the studio about the percentage of the police budget that goes to drug arrests?
Yes, I would love to see that.
I would love to see it, too. I will ask our friend, the public researcher.
Oh, you don't have it at hand. So when you said, let me bring it in, you were saying some other time with some other source.
And by the time I get it, you will have already been defeated for city council. However, we'll be able to bring it up later because it'll still be completely relevant.
Expect a miracle, my friend. Expect a miracle.
I would love to see you elected, frankly, Stephen. I will be voting for you, but I'm not going to try to pull the wool over any of the voters' eyes. This does not mean you shouldn't vote for Steve. Not at all. I would suggest you vote for him two and three times if necessary.
Vote early and vote often is my campaign motto.
Vote early and often. That's correct. So, but I'm surprised.
That's effective for me in college, by the way, where I did have people vote early enough. That's another story.
Well, you know, it's unfortunate you haven't really brought up these issues, which I know are not all the rage among with the Lynn Robinson, Hillary Bryant crowd that you may have,
No, and they are subjects that are of interest to me and that I would certainly bring up in my capacity as a city council member. Or, in fact, in my capacity as a citizen, past November 2nd, when I have certain items on my agenda that I'd like to pursue, one of them being homeless advocacy, but several other things that I'll pursue. So I'm going
to
be prominent in
the
policy.
It seems to me the drug war is a significant part of police activity.
Well, I think part of the drug war is being conducted by ICE, which is not a police department, but it is not a department of our police force. Also being conducted by the DEA, which we have no control over, also by, you know, other agencies. So I think those agencies should not be enforcing drug laws in our city. And I've said that at candidates' forum.
Right, but you're not talking about the police department. This is like what Rotkin does. He says on campus, you know, this and that and the other, but when he talks about actual activities he can control at the city council,
I can control when I'm on city council. You're asking me to take action now when I'm not on city council, and presuming that I'm not going to be on city council, and it imposing on me some obligation that I do these things outside of whatever authority I might have.
No, not so
you
fast.
Just exactly
Mr.
what you did.
Mr. Slippery Guy, if you're going to be criticizing the DEA and ICE, and you should
and
also
I've criticized the DEA and
also,
ICE at candidates'
you
forum.
Should also be criticizing the SCPD for its drug activities in Santa Cruz as well.
I don't know enough about their drug
activities. How much more do you know about the DEA and the ICE than you do about the SCPD?
I know that they shouldn't be in our community enforcing drug
law. Why should anybody in our community be enforcing this bullshit?
I'm taking one thing at a time, and those things I can take. Then those things I can do.
The area that you take at the time is the area that you are moving into. If you're talking about being in the city council,
and then let's see what I do when I'm on city council.
No,
you're already presuming that I'm not going to take any action on the city council.
I'm interested.
You've made that presumption right now.
I'm asking if you're talking about these issues, and you're telling me you're not because you don't know enough about them. Yet you claimed enough about these other agencies to criticize them.
Yeah, I
sense here a failure. I sense here a
I understand that the DEA can be here and clean up drug activity entirely in Santa Cruz, and then they'll leave and go back to Washington, and in a month we'll have the same drug activity it serves no principal purpose.
I suggest to you, are you supporting cleaning up drug activity, period?
No,
are you suggesting
I didn't say
it's a
that.
Good
I'm
idea
saying,
to fight
I'm
the
saying,
drug war?
I'm saying that's
more
what the, that's, saying that's
that
what the DEA
saying?
Is saying.
Well, then let's not play around. This sounds like politician talk, Steve. Don't
I'm a politician. You're an advocate.
No.
We've agreed on that.
No, you're a rational human being, and if you actually are running for political office, we'll forgive you for that. If you use it as a forum for pressing issues that are meaningful, that's what I'm concerned about. If you're going to play political games here and not criticize agencies that you will have influence on, you're not
well,
going to influence
gonna,
the
I'm
DEA.
I'm not going to criticize them now until I have the influence of the power to do so effectively. I'm just not going to do
I'm
it.
I'm sorry. When you're running for this is you are at your maximum power not right now when you're in these forums, you'll actually be able to raise the issues. Once November passes,
and those
passes,
are the issues that I've raised
won't.
In the forums. Have you been have you been to any of the forums?
You raised the
have
issue?
You been to
I'm
any of the
Robert,
have you been to one
I've,
single
yes,
forum?
Yes.
Which one?
The first one you were in.
Yeah. You were outside.
No, I was inside, and then I
briefly.
Outside.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. One.
And
forum,
I heard it too.
And
it
who put
recorded.
That on that forum? The Operator
Excuse
Engineers
me,
Union.
You would acknowledge you have not raised the issue in the forums, whether I was there or not.
The
you
issues
not,
were raised in the forums, and I responded
of,
to
the
it.
The issue of the drug war in Santa Cruz has not been addressed by you with respect to the Santa Cruz Police Department. Yes or no?
No.
Appreciate your candor. I think you should raise it.
All right. Then I will do so at the very first opportunity. The issue that was raised is whether or not I believe that DEA and I should be in our community enforcing drug laws and fighting any kind of drug war at all. And I said, no, they shouldn't be.
You could have taken that opportunity to say, nor should the Santa Cruz Police Department be doing
and
that.
And in the 2 minutes that we're allowed to respond to these questions, and I should have elaborated this and your position that, there, is
position?
Some, that there is some
I
grand
think it's
conspiracy
a number
against
of
everybody.
Grand
because,
conspiracy?
Yeah.
No. It's no. A matter of whether 64% of the police budget, a significant portion of it, should be spent on a drug war in Santa Cruz. It's a question
well,
of whether,
64% of the budget is spent on law enforcement activities, public safety.
It's a question of whether the drug war activity is public safety or quite the opposite. It's a question of whether increasing marijuana arrests by 50% in the last year is having a positive impact on our community.
And I wouldn't be, and I wouldn't be in favor of that. I'm not in favor of that.
Well, that's good. But why don't you mention it in the forums?
Because
that's where it might have an impact.
Because they don't ask it in the forums. And
there
I can't figure out a way.
They don't ask that you mentioned. Yeah.
And
you spare me your bullshit.
So you know.
We have a caller here.
One of the 13.
Sky caller, you're on the air with the Slippery Steve and Uncle Robert here.
Hi, Robert. This is Scott.
Scope it out, Scott. Hey there, Scott.
So anyway, I don't know if you've noticed, but today the Arana Gulch thing was in front of the Coastal Commission, and they voted it down.
I believe it was mentioned to me by one of my associates. Well, can you want to describe what that was, Scott, and what the significance of that is?
Well, what it was this giant subterfuge by the city. They were originally they wanted to build a road through Arana Gulch, and that was shot down by the public. Then they came up with this idea of, well, let's build a bicycle superhighway through the gulch. People didn't like that idea, so then they turned it into an interpretive trail and handicapped access and baby carriage access. And the Coastal Commission, in their wisdom, realized that all of this was just a pack of lies and that it really was a transportation project. Because what was ultimately was going to happen was that the city, if they were allowed to build a bike path, would then in the future say, well, because of the traffic impacts on the surface streets in the city, we're going to have to turn this bike path into a road for cars.
Now, what basis do you say that, Scott?
That's the way the city operates, Robert. You know that.
Well, no, I'm pleading ignorance. But Steve here is a man who's been to a number of city council forums that I have not attended. Perhaps he can give us
one out of 13. I think was the latest count.
That's correct.
A half out of 13, actually. But, yeah.
Yes. Well,
I didn't realize that they had finally voted on that. I was in the protest with People Power when the Coastal Commission was here originally, looking at the Arana Gulch plan. They took the tour of Arana Gulch, and I was familiar with the arguments made about interpretive paths and things like that. I think the one thing that made the Coastal Commission hesitant initially when they were here was they had such an argument about whether the tar root plant could survive in there when they built these paths, as I'm sure you know.
Right, yes. I'm one of the people that has been fighting against this stupid path for years.
Uh-huh.
But we all agree the tar route thing is a bunch of bullshit, do we not?
No, it's not, Robert. There is a plant that's listed by the state and the federal government as an endangered species.
Well, I'll tell you that when I was at the Coastal Commission meeting after the tour of Arana Gulch, the most persuasive argument made by anybody was the forensic botanist you had that was talking about the tar root plant. And I think that tipped the balance. That's why they put it off at that time and didn't
work. Gray haze.
Yeah. But a fantastic presentation. I didn't realize that the tar root plants, the seeds can't migrate but only a few feet, and you know, that's a problem. But certainly, what do you think about Michael Posner and People Power's position that we really need to have a bike pass through there?
People Power is a one-man operation. Michael Posner is the king. He's the Chairman Mao of People Power.
Well,
and he basically, if you don't agree with him, then you can't be a member of People Power, is the way it basically works. I was on the People Power steering committee at one time. I know how the place works.
Well, I certainly can't argue the fact with you, but he certainly has a seemingly tremendous influence on every action that's taken by and in the name of People Power.
Well, yes, that's because he's the Chairman Mao of People Power.
Well, he's the executive director, but yeah, of course.
But anyway, People Power claims to be an environmental organization until it comes to making bike paths. Then they ignore the environment, even though the information, if you want to their headquarters and looked up environmental issues, one of the most damaging things that humans engage in is building roads.
Yeah, or paths for that matter.
Yes. Well, it's a bike road.
Of course it is.
And
but what happened was that when the Coastal Commission decided to reserve their judgment on this, they went against their own staff report and the city's staff report. Maybe those staff reports weren't comprehensive enough.
The Coastal Commission staff had been against this plan for years. And then for some reason, at the very last moment, at the last meeting last spring,
I was there.
They were all of a sudden in favor of it.
Right.
Which is, I'm not sure what happened. I don't know.
And enthusiastically,
Frank Keeley came down and talked to him and said, "Listen, we're going to pull your fund. I'm going to go to Sacramento and lobby to get the funding pulled from this office."
Mm-hmm.
I think he did the same thing to Stone, because Stone reversed himself.
Right.
Last time he voted
against
it, this time he voted
and
for
he was,
it.
Yeah.
I think he wanted Frank Keeley went and talked to Stone.
Well,
told Stone, you know what? I'm going to make sure that you don't get reelected. That way you're going to be off the Coastal Commission.
Fred Keeley's got that kind of power, and Mark Stone was the most recent appointee, certainly, to the Coastal Commission, as you know.
Right. Fred Keeley is a worm.
Yeah. Well, there was also
He's a slimy worm.
There was also the city staff report that recommended it.
The city is the one that's trying to build it. Of course they're going to recommend it. If they didn't recommend it, why would they even bring it forward?
Yeah. So you think that the characterization of that as an interpretive path is...
You can't build a highway and then put a sign up saying, oh, yeah, there's a plant over here.
No, I understand. That
and
was
have that be an interpretive trail.
That was the argument that was made a little more eloquently by your fellow there, the botanist. But that really turned the tide on that whole hearing.
Right.
No question.
You know, I mean, you can put as many layers of pig lipstick as you want on it, but it's still a transportation project in an environmentally sensitive habitat area.
Are you a member of the Friends of Arana Gulch?
Yes.
Okay.
As one of the people who sued the city over the whole thing.
Yeah, well, I'll let you know something that when we had our coastal cleanup day recently, my area was Arana Gulch and the Greenbelt there. So I was there getting the folks to go out and help clean up the Arana Gulch Greenbelt, and I have a great respect for that area. And I have appreciation for it myself, having been there and having been able to lead cleanups there. So we're doing what we can.
Yeah, it would help if the city would actually, pass their master plan minus a project.
Mm-hmm.
Because they wouldn't even have to go to the Coastal Commission.
Yeah.
They would just say, okay, we got a master plan for Arana Gulch. They wouldn't have to go to the Coastal Commission to have their permission to pass it.
Yeah.
It was because there was a project attached to it that they had to go in front of the Coastal Commission.
One of the things that my volunteers collected, or a few of the things they collected during the coastal cleanup, was quite a few drug paraphernalia and homeless belongings.
And that would increase if there was a road out there.
Yeah. That's kind of
every place that they build bike road. That's the same thing They're going to try in Poganip. Oh, we're going to build a bike path through Poganip to scare away all the hippie, all the people that are living out in the bushes there shooting up drugs. No, that's going to increase the number. I mean, Jose Park, right over on the other side of Bromer Street.
I know it will.
Okay, there's a path, a bike path through there.
Uh-huh.
They have to lock it at night because of the drug activity that was going on.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm as concerned about Arana Gulch as you are. It's a beautiful greenbelt area in the city, but, you know, so is Poganip. So we're going to have to figure out some way that we can kind of reclaim that and use it.
Well, the way to reclaim it is to get rid of the drug gangs that are infesting our town.
How bad is that in the Arana Gulch? I know the Poganip because, as you probably heard, I work with Needle Exchange, and we have folks in the Poganip doing outreach for us, but I'm not as familiar with the Arana Gulch situation.
Well, Arana Gulch, there's not a lot of drug sales. Now, there's a lot of drug use by the homeless people that camp there.
Uh-huh.
But there's not a lot of drug sales there as far as I know.
Okay.
But if they were to build the bike path, that would definitely happen, just like it did in Jose Park. Yeah.
Well, it looks like that's not going to happen now.
Well, you don't know. I mean, the city could either, A, they could choose to sue the Coastal Commission over their decision, or B, they could come up with a different path and bring it back to the Coastal Commission.
Right, yeah. You think they're going to continue to pursue this?
Oh, I'm sure they will. They've already spent millions of dollars, and once they start on something like this, they don't give up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've got the next 20 years to keep on this stupid idea, keep this stupid idea going.
You've got the next 20 years to fight it, then.
Yeah.
I want to thank both of you for this very enlightening topic, which is central to the homeless issue here.
Joseph Stalin, I want to search your house deal they just passed.
I want to see that T-shirt, and I demand a copy of it. Scope it out, Scott. Thanks for the update, man.
All right, Scott. Take care, Robert.
Bye-bye. We only have about 10 minutes left in the show. Steve, you're invited to come back to get more abuse on Sunday, of course.
I'll be here. You know I will.
You know, I'm expecting to hear about your latest adventures with Honest John Barisoni,
who I won't talk to between now and Sunday.
Well, I'll be that way. But
if there's a candidates forum between now and then, can I be sure that you won't be there?
I'm going to be. I'll avoid you at all costs. The candidates, they're so exciting, these candidates.
One for 13.
And can we be assured that you will not mention? Can we be assured that you will not mention? You will not.
One for 13 from the free throw line, for instance. One for 13.
You will not mention the Santa Cruz Police Department's drug war policies and any of these forums upcoming.
I will the next chance I get.
Good for you.
You have my pledge.
We'll see if that pledge
is
fulfilled.
And I don't make pledges or promises lightly.
And I don't come to these forums lightly. In fact, I don't come to them heavily. I don't come to them at all, actually.
You do a quick calculation of what
you
one
are,
out of 13
you have,
is.
You supposedly be recording these forums. I believe some member of the public gave you a tape recorder to do some recording. How many of these have you actually recorded there?
I haven't recorded any, but I've given you reports on every single one.
From this very
microphone.
Indeed.
True or false? True or false? Don't like the answer.
I heard some reports. Some reports.
There you go. Okay.
Now, actually, we have a few interviews from the street I'd like to play.
Oh, good.
We don't have much time left.
Always a
delight. You are listening to Steve, the irascible Plaich. And here, of course, is the voice of the people, and they always come first, unfortunately. Hi there. You're on Free Radio with Steve and Robert. Hello?
I have a question for Steve.
Oh, no, it's Uncle Dennis again. You have your own show, Dennis. Give it a rest.
Go ahead, Dennis. What can I do for you?
What is it?
Steve, I'd like you to comment on your public stand on social services other than homeless issues in Santa Cruz. How about child care, early child education, and senior care? Can you comment on those, please?
Yeah, well, Dennis, what I've said at the candidates forum is that it's my responsibility as a city councilman to find the money to fund core social services. Nobody in this city, no one disadvantaged, dispossessed, or disabled will ever be found wanting when I'm a city council member. We have a social safety net. It's our responsibility to maintain and support that social safety net. So whatever I have to do to make that happen as a city council member, I'm going to make it happen.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate that, Stan.
Thank you, Dennis.
Bye-bye.
And Dennis may, in fact, grill you when he comes into the studio, because he's coming in 8 minutes. Who knows, maybe even sooner. The guy tends to steal the last part of my show shamelessly, setting up his bizarre equipment. Let's hear a little bit from the street, though. And for those who are interested, Steve will next be appearing at...
Oh, I'll be downtown Saturday evening conducting a poll on behalf of Huff for raising homeless awareness.
Are you going to be at the Rittenhouse celebration on the
second floor
of the Downtown Association's Gala 40
years? I am not. I'm going to be at the Pacific Rim Film Festival. I'll be standing outside in line, Todd and myself surveying the folks on their awareness about homelessness.
Are you in the memory
bands.
Of Todd in any case?
Yeah. We're going to be there.
All right. Who knows? Maybe I'll be there as well. It's a possibility.
Unless it's a forum, of course.
Forums are another issue. Thanks for being with the Institution of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. Here's a few more street interviews before Uncle Dennis comes galumping into the studio.
It's October 8th in the morning around 9:05. I'm in front of the side of the library facing City Hall. And it's a Friday morning. I'm talking with Vamp. Vamp, you're an old-timer who's been with the Peace Camp 2010 for many a month, or many a week, or quite a while. You didn't sleep here at this spot, which is often a spot which peace campers slept at when the City Hall protest was going on, but you slept nearby.
Yes, I slept about a block away.
Yet, you suffered an unrequested early morning shower.
Yes, just about 25 minutes ago, I was awoken by a worker. He was not a city worker or anything like that, just a maintenance guy. And he literally turned the hose on me and started spraying me.
And what did he do so knowing you were there?
Oh, yeah. I was purely visible.
And where exactly was this? Where were you, if you want to say?
I will say I was close to the top of the world.
And, I mean, were you in some area that he would normally be hosing, or was it a gratuitous or unnecessary hosing?
Oh, no, it was gratuitous and unnecessary hosing.
So you weren't, were you sleeping?
I was laying on cement.
So he didn't have to hose the cement. Now, did he warn you, you better move because I'm about to hose?
No, he woke me up by hosing me.
And what did this guy look like?
Without trying to say sound race or anything, he was a little short Hispanic guy.
And did he smile as he did this, or did he frown, or did he sort of have an impassive look?
Kind of impassive. He hit me with the hose, and I got wet. I jumped up, grabbed my stuff, and hurried off.
Did he say anything?
No.
Did you say anything? Aha! You no doubt gave him a sense of your opinion.
I had choice words, yes.
And did he respond?
No.
And is this a normal sleeping spot that you've been in the last few days or nights?
Oh, yes.
And have you ever been hosed there before?
No, I've never even seen it. I actually have a pretty good rapport with the rest of the workers. Mm-hmm. And they're leaving on.
And were other people sleeping in the nearby area?
Oh, yes, there's others.
Did they get hosed?
No.
So do you think maybe he simply felt you needed a cleaning, so he came over to give you the opportunity, anticipating it was going to be a hot day? Of course, it isn't really a hot day, but...
I think he just did it because he felt that he could get me up and away.
Do you think did he have some need to get you up, and were you blocking a pathway?
No.
Were you... you said you were lying on the cement. Were you... you say you weren't visible.
No, I was visible, but I was visible to him. It's because as soon as you walk in on the little section of the cement that I was at, mm-hmm. which is a little square, you can see me.
Uh-huh. And he didn't... Were other people within a 5 or 10 foot radius, or were they further away?
Oh, they're further away. We're spread out.
And did they observe any of this?
Just one of the older guys observed it.
Did he have any comments?
He said that it was bullshit and... that he would be talking to the other maintenance guys, manager. So,
now, Vamp, you are also a defendant in upcoming trials for sleeping tickets and lodging tickets with Peace Camp 2010.
Yes.
You have an arraignment date?
I don't know. I don't pay attention to it.
What name are your tickets under so we can check to see if you are about to be grabbed and spirited away?
Samuel Muller.
How do you spell the last?
M-U-L-L-E-R.
So, get that officer. We'll make sure he gets taken where he needs to be taken. Have you had any other encounters with the police that you think need to be mentioned that you've found of interest?
Oh, yeah. Actually, the last couple of days, myself and a few of my other friends have been being constantly harassed by one officer, Winston. And I told him, because he told me I couldn't be standing somewhere.
Where was that?
We were by the metro station, uh-huh. And they have the little alley in the back. Mm-hmm. Okay, that little alley in the back side is for smoking, uh-huh. Because they don't allow you to smoke at the metro. Uh-huh. Well, I was back there smoking a cigarette, and there were some other people around. Somebody was drinking, somebody got called. He comes in. Everybody that's not in any problems, he ran everybody's name and everything. And
he ran your name?
He ran my name. And then, just because it's taking one of my friends a little bit longer to get up because he has a cane, he starts, you know what I mean, just being blatantly disrespectful to my friend.
What did he say, or what did he do that indicated that?
He was pretty much telling him, he was like, you have 3 seconds to get up, or else I'm taking you to jail.
For what crime?
For loitering.
There's no crime.
Yeah. Under the, hadn't been there 15 minutes yet. By state law, you have to be there more than 14 minutes and 59 seconds for it to be considered loitering anyway.
Well, actually, that's the city ordinance for parking lots, and if you're in the metro, it's not, was it a parking lot or was it an alley or something?
It's an alley that cars can't even enter.
So, is there any posted signs that indicate any time limits or
no,
any no loitering signs?
There are no loitering signs. Yeah. However, we're told to go out there to smoke.
By
security for Metro.
I see. And so did you inform Officer Winston that one of his brother officers had told you to go out there?
Yes, and I also told Officer Winston I plan on filing a civil suit for harassment against him.
With your extensive legal knowledge and legal assistance, no doubt.
Yes. And not just on by my part, but on behalf of homelessness.
Huh.
And the homeless people. Because he continually and has admitted that he does not like homeless people here and that he will do everything he can to get us out of the downtown area.
So this was the only incident. And when did this incident happen?
2 days ago.
And about what time of day?
About 10 o'clock in the afternoon.
In the afternoon or in the morning?
Well, morning. Getting ready to be afternoon.
Okay. 10 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And any other encounters you wish to note?
No, that's it.
And we've been talking with
Vamp.
Thank you, Vamp.
And again, that's it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Coming up next, the ineffable music and commentary of our very own Uncle Dennis.